many times it seems that you're the only hope inside. Is it mine? Oh Lord, is it mine? When
good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 11th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, donate $5 a month or more by clicking on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight we're going to where we left off on our Bible reading last week. It's in the book of Romans. The book of Romans, chapter 4. What shall we say then? That Abraham our father, as pertaining to the flesh, hath found. For if Abraham were justified by works, he had whereof to glorify, but not before God. For what saith the Scriptures? Abraham believed God, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness. Now to him that worketh is the reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. But to him that worketh not, but believeth on him that justifieth the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness. Even as David also describeth the blessedness of the man unto whom God imputed righteousness without works, saying, Blessed are they whose iniquities are forgiven, and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord will not impute sin. Cometh this blessedness then upon the circumcision only, or upon uncircumcision also? For we say that faith was reckoned to Abraham for righteousness. How was it then reckoned? When he was in circumcision, or in uncircumcision? Not in circumcision, but in uncircumcision. And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith, which he had yet being uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all them that believe. Though they be not circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed unto them also. And the father of circumcision to them who are not of circumcision only, but also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had been yet uncircumcised. For the promise that he should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if they which are of the law be the heirs, faith is made void, and the promise made none effect. Because the law worketh wrath, for where no law is, there is no transgression. Therefore it is of faith, that it might be of grace, to the end the promise, which be sure of all the seed. Not to that only which is of the law, but to that also which is of the faith, Abraham, who is the father of us all. As it is written, I have made thee a father of many nations, before whom he believed, even God, who quickened the dead, and called those things which be not as though they were. Who against hope believeth in hope, that he might become the father of many nations, according to that which was spoken, so shall thy seed be. And being not weak in faith, he considered not his own body now dead, when he was about 100 years old, neither yet the deadness of Sarah's womb. He staggered not at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strong in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully persuaded that what he had promised he was able also to perform, and therefore it was imputed to him for righteousness. Now it was not written for his sake alone that it was imputed to him, but for us also, to whom it shall be imputed, if we believe on him that raised up Jesus our Lord from the dead, who was delivered for our offense, and was raised again for our justification. Romans chapter 4. Okay, tonight we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We were looking at our paper that we had filed, an action against the judiciary. It was the first paper we filed in the court of record that we had opened back on April 6th, I think it is. Hang on, let me take a look. Matter of fact, I'll show you the page. If you go into grand jury, click on action against the judiciary, you'll find it under that heading there. August 17th, 2019. So that's the paper we're going to be reading. It's a decision and order declaration to restore the law of the land. We read part one last week. Looks like it's going to be done in three parts. This will be part two. We're picking up on page 41 according to the PDF, but on the paper itself, it's page 32 of 50. And I believe we're picking up right here the decision and the order. So. Right, this is part two of the paper we filed in the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York against the United States Supreme Court, the Federal Judiciary, the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. House of Representatives, and others. Included in here, which is a declaration of restoration of the law of the land, but included in here also is written mandamuses and a demand, of course, to return to the law with decisions and orders. We will be picking up where we left off. This is page 16 of 50. And, of course, you can follow along by going to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight the grand jury, click on action against the jury, and just come down a couple of paragraphs, and you'll see declaration for restoration ordered on 8/17/19. And it would be the first paper up here listed up as filed August 17th, 2019, decision and order declaration to restore the law. Okay, so we're starting on this PDF on page 25. On the paper itself, it would read on the bottom of the page 16 of 50, picking up about a quarter down the page, titled Bar-Controlled Federal and State Court Judges, by their presumed authority, contrary to their oath and duty, violate the supreme law of the land. Bar prosecutors overrule the people's indictments. We have seen case after case where district attorneys refuse to indict crimes committed by bureaucrats, criminal corporate CEOs, and cartels as they block the people from meeting with the grand jury. We had one case where the DA went after an individual charging him with stalking the grand jury and then was indicted and went to jail for 2 years because the criminal DA did not want the grand jury to hear about all the crimes of all these untouchables. Take the recent Jesse Smollett case, where a Cook County grand jury indicted Smollett this year on felony charges. And on March 26, less than 3 weeks after the indictment, the Cook County State Attorney Kim Fox, like the legions of many other corrupt court officers, unlawfully removed the indictment against Smollett. In the case of the United States versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, said, motions to quash indictments based upon the sufficiency of the evidence relied upon by the grand jury were unheard of at common law in England. The quashing of an indictment positively contradicts the common law of the Fifth Amendment grand jury. And the traditional American practice was described by Justice Nelson, writing in 1852, as follows. No case has been cited, nor have we been able to find any furnishing an authority for looking into and revising the judgments of the grand jury upon the evidence for the purpose of determining whether or not the findings was founded upon sufficient proof or whether there was deficiency in respect to any part of the complaint. We accept Justice Nelson's description, Costello versus the United States, where we held that it would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury institution to permit an indictment to be challenged on the grounds that there was incompetent or inadequate evidence before the grand jury. And we reaffirmed this principle recently in Bank of Nova Scotia, where we held that the mere fact that evidence itself is unreliable is not sufficient to require a dismissal of the indictment, and that a challenge to the reliability or competence of the evidence presented to the grand jury will not be heard. It would make little sense, we think, to abstain from reviewing the evidentiary support of the grand jury's judgment while scrutinizing the sufficiency of the prosecutor's presentation. A complaint about the quality or adequacy of the evidence can always be recast as a complaint that the prosecutor's presentation was incomplete or misleading. Our words in Costello bear repeating. Review of facially valid indictments on such grounds would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury's institution, and neither justice nor the concept of a fair trial requires it. The people have the unalienable right to indict the judge, and no hired servant can place themselves above their master. Rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of a grand jury has generally been confined to the constitutive one of calling the grand jurors together and administering their oaths of office. The systematic destruction of America by enemies both foreign and domestic. Abrogation of the common law on August 21, 1878. 75 bar lawyers from 20 states and the District of Columbia met in Saratoga Springs, New York, to establish the American Bar Association. Since that first meeting, the American Bar Association, called the ABA, have infiltrated our government at every level and played a pivotal role in the abrogation of common law, also known as natural law, in the United States by conspiring with the judiciary and Congress for the Constitution, for the construction of law, thereby seizing control of all government official narratives on law. If the people dare to correct or challenge bureaucratic lawlessness, they are met with by swarms of bar lawyers and all too often swarms of law enforcement agents. They removed the 13th Amendment ratified in 1819 that prevented foreign-controlled bar members from holding an office of trust and replaced it with another in 1865. They abrogated our unalienable rights by changing them into civil rights, calling those privileges and immunities, placing people under civil law in 1868 through the 14th Amendment. They created a foreign state within a city, called Washington, D.C., through the Organic Act of 1871, placing the United States under the control of foreigners via the Deep State. They enslaved the people under the Federal Reserve Act, which gave complete control of the dollar to foreign bankers. Today, the 1913 dollar is worth about 4 cents. They have subjected the people to debtor's prison by taxing their labor, thereby enslaving the people through the unratified, anti-constitutional, repugnant 16th Amendment. They removed the state's rights of suffrage in 1913 through the Senate, thereby enslaving the states through the unratified, anti-constitutional, repugnant 17th Amendment. In 1944, at the Bretton Woods Agreement Conference, the United States totally surrendered the people's sovereignty to the banking forces by forcing the nations of the world to accept the dictates of the centralized banking system. The International Organization Immunities Act, enacted in 1945, relinquished every public office of the United States to the United Nations and established a special group of foreign or international organizations whose members could work in the United States and enjoy certain exemptions from U.S. taxes and search and seizure laws. In 1947, NSA and CIA became operational and marked the birth of the National Police State Surveillance Grid. Today, the CIA is a private corporation which operates as a prostitute for global banking interests and does not represent the United States. In 1948, the creation of the United Nations on American soil marked the beginning of the end of political sovereignty in the United States. John Kerry, without the approval of the Senate, signed the United Nations Arms Treaty, which will attempt to eliminate the Second Amendment and private property, will be eliminated in America through the United Nations Agenda 21 program that is spreading across America. In 1950, the 81st Congress investigated the Lawyers Guild and determined that the association was founded and run by communists. Since at least 1960, Americans have been conditioned to ignore the encroachment of tyranny through television and the sequence propagandized of this medium of communication. In 1962, prayer was outlawed in the classroom, which marked the beginning of moral decay in America. On September 11, 2001, the National Police State Surveillance Grid reached maturity. This event created, under the guise of national security, the Department of Homeland Security, TSA, and FEMA, which during a national emergency controls every resource, every asset, and even our freedom. It also creates the it created the Patriot Act, and now today virtually every communication that we engage in is monitored and recorded for future use against the people. They have flooded our courts with nearly 150 years of repugnant acts, statutes, and rules, and applied them upon the people. And Title 28, U.S.C. 3002, Section 15A, in 1990, states that the United States is a federal corporation and not a government, including the judicial procedural section. The de jure states, in the form of a republic, and the de jure United States were incorporated or set aside by the Bankruptcy Act of 1933. Of course, their unconstitutional act of legislation are nothing short of repugnant to the Constitution, and therefore have no teeth, and can simply be nullified by the people, and it is nullified herein. An unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no right. It imposes no duties, affords no protection, it creates no office, it is in legal contemplation, as inoperative as though it had never been passed. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. The truth holds that if we, the people, invest the judiciary with the power to judge men subject to the legislation of men, how much more the king's bench to judge all men subject to God's law? All of the aforesaid destructive acts were possible because the federal government, after lulling the people to sleep via propaganda through mass media over many years, have seized control of our once biblical classical education and replaced it with their outcome-based socialist education, and thereby resulting in ignorance of the law, liberty, and American history, communism, Marxism, socialism, and democracy, which is mob rule, are destructive to government by consent of the people under natural law. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy warned the people when he said, "We are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its spheres of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of election, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War, in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy would ever hope or wish to match. There is a very grave danger that an announcement need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment." The government-supported ABA has systematically infiltrated our federal and state legislators and courts, and through an overwhelming army of non-thinking, highly trained in the art of legalese Babylonia code attorneys that serve the lie and not the truth. These lawless lawyers confuse the common people with their mumbo-jumbo and irrelevant arguments. They have flooded our courts with nearly 150 years of repugnant acts, statutes, and rules, such as the aforesaid Organic Act of 1871, Federal Reserve in 1913, Sixth Amendment, 1913, 17th Amendment, 1913, 49 Statute, 3097 Treaty Series 881, 1933. International Organization Immunities Act, Title 8, USC 1481, Title 26, the Internal Revenue Code, 1954, and Title 28, and the Patriot Act of 2001, and Homeland Security Act of 2002, to name just a few seditious acts of Congress that are exercised in our courts daily against the patriots, along with the elusive federal rules that, when harmonized, accomplishes the seizing of our Article III courts and the delivering of we the people to jurisdictions unknown. The government-supported ABA willfully advocates, abets, advises, and teaches repugnant statutes as law, designed to enslave the people and overthrow federal and state governments. These tyrants have ignored and expunged the people's six directives. Instead of forming a more perfect union, they have given our federal cities, our post office, a coining of our money, and law writing to foreign bankers and bar attorneys. Instead of establishing justice, they have concealed our courts of natural law, turned our courts to jurisdictions unknown, abolished habeas corpus, changed our unalienable rights to civil rights via the repugnant and null and void 14th Amendment by claiming that we are subject to the United States jurisdictions, when in fact we are subject only to natural law. They turned lawmaking over to the bar, who have abrogated the law of the land. Instead of providing for the common defense, they have kept our armed forces in a state of perpetual war against the will of the states, since our National Guard, also known as the militia, to foreign countries, leaving the states unprotected, abolished the unorganized militia, closed our armories, and imposed gun control. Instead of promoting the general welfare, they have regulated commerce instead of making commerce regular. They control the flow. They impose unconstitutional sin taxes. They have prevented and hidden advancements in science, health, technology, and inventors have been stifled and murdered. And instead of securing the blessings of liberty, they have changed our natural law constitutional republic first into a democracy and then into an oligarchy. Federal judiciary has seized power, not delegated them. The assumption of sovereign power and the institution of government by consent are acts of supreme authority which the people alone are competent to perform. And accordingly, it is in the name and by the authority of the people that the judiciary was vested, whereas the federal judiciary has seized power, not delegated to them, in violation of the 10th Amendment. Abortion, a case in point. The people ought to decide through courts of judges, not judges in courts of equity, concerning the issue of abortion, which is under the jurisdiction of natural law, not equity. Roe v. Wade was unconstitutionally adjudicated by the United States Supreme Court, which is an equity court, governed by code, statutes, and regulations. And thereby the judiciary seared the conscience of America, and today we restore America's morals. This then brings the issue into its proper jurisdiction, a natural law court of record, adjudicated by the King's Bench, which of course is the jury, we the people, made up of 12 people who are to mirror the will of nature's God, answering to him alone. The United States Supreme Court does not have the authority to think like God's adversary that they can change God's laws. We read in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, "And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change the times and the laws." Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. The United States Supreme Court and its federal judiciary is in bad behavior. They have unlawfully tread upon the Constitution, the rights of the people, and the states to govern themselves. And most alarmingly, they think that they can change the laws of God. Therefore, the United States Supreme Court and its inferior courts are to immediately cease their lawless jurisdictional advances designed to spread their socialist agenda or suffer the consequences of indictments for subversion, conspiracy, and treason. Over the past two decades, the United States Supreme Court remained silent when we the people exercised the unalienable right demanding a redress of grievances, which is protected by the First Amendment. The United States Supreme Court, having control power over their out-of-control inferior courts, turn a blind eye to the sins of the subversion by the federal judiciary when they have a duty to stop it. The United States Supreme Court has sanctioned the turning of our national law courts into de facto fictional equity courts. The United States Supreme Court has sanctioned the writings of rules repugnant to liberty by the bar minions of the New World Order. The United States Supreme Court has sanctioned the concealment of our natural law courts, thereby causing the people to weary themselves to find the door. The United States Supreme Court has sanctioned equity rules in our courts of law that deny due process. The following is a short list of Bill of Rights violations and the seizing of jurisdictions never vested to the tyrannical federal judiciary and interfering with numerous issues protected by the Tenth Amendment that clearly belong to the states and the people. They overturned the people's right to vote English as their official language. They overturned state legislation passing term limits for politicians. They overturned the people's right to vote to stop state-funded taxpayer services to illegal aliens. They overturned the people's right to deny special rights to homosexuals. They overturned the people's right to vote to defeat tax increases. They overturned the people's right to vote to limit contributions to the state candidates. They overturned state legislation that passed a woman's right to know the law concerning abortion. They overturned the state legislation that passed a marriage amendment. They overturned the people's right to vote against physician-assisted suicide. They overturned the people's right to vote to define a marriage between a man and a woman. They have denied Amendment 1, the right of the people's petition, the government for redress of grievances. They have denied Amendment 2, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. They have denied Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, house, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures. They have denied Amendment 5, the unalienable right to a natural law court grand jury, and not put in double jeopardy, and not to be witness against themselves. They have denied Amendment 6, the unalienable right of a impartial jury and non-bar assistant to counsel. They have denied Amendment 7, the unalienable right of a common law jury and a natural law jurisdiction. They have denied Amendment 10, the state and the people's rights of powers that's not delegated to the United States by the Constitution. They have legalized murder via abortion that natural law will not permit. They have interfered with the president's constitutional duties to protect our borders, and they have concealed the people's unalienable rights of natural law courts. Destruction of sovereignty. By the following three repugnant amendments, the bar minions of the New World Order have been nibbling away at our Constitution since the beginning, destroying the balance of power, the law, state sovereignty, and the sovereignty of the people. The 14th Amendment attempts to change our unalienable rights granted by God into privileges granted by men. The 16th Amendment attempts to turn the people into indentured servants, subjecting them to debtors' prisons if they do not submit, and thereby turning the people into subjects of the federal government, no longer sovereign, but slaves. The 17th Amendment usurped the state's jurisdiction, whereas these states have been deprived their equal suffrage in the Senate in violation of the Constitution, Article 5, thereby destroying the balance of power between the states and the Federation. This robbed the states and the people of their ability to exercise power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states, that was reserved to the states respectively or to the people, protected by the Tenth Amendment, thereby stealing the state's sovereignty. We, the people, hereby nullify the 14th, 16th, and 17th Amendments. Our servants are taking money, herein after bribes, from special interest groups, thereby selling their vote and their soul to the highest bidder via lobbying, usually on legislation that more often than not, they don't even have the constitutional authority to pass in the first place, and placing the will of the corporate world above the will of the people. Acts of our servants are not to provide for special interest groups, are not to divide us, are not to establish statutory courts and jurisdictions unknown, are not to establish laws that enslave the human spirit, are not to keep us in perpetual war, are not to demoralize us, are not to destroy our posterity, and are not to put us in harm's way, are not to rob our children of our property, education, and are not to lead us as lambs to the slaughter to the New World Order. George Washington, in his farewell address, speaking of the subverts, said, "They have obstructed the execution of the laws, using combinations and associations under whatever plausible character with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or awe the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities, are destructive of this fundamental principle and of fatal tendency. They serve to organize faction, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to force it in place of the delegated will of the nation, the will of the party. Often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternate triumphs of different parties, to make the public administration the mirror of the ill-concerted and incongruous projects of factions, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by the common councils and modified by mutual interests. However, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely, in the course of time and things, to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them up to unjust dominions. Acts of betrayal, acts of fraud, acts of treason. The federal judiciary is a creature of the law with clipped authority. The unauthorized creation of a foreign state within a federal city by the 41st Congress, who acted without constitutional authority, was an act of fraud, conspiracy, and subversion against the United States of America. Only we the people can ordain and establish laws and governments. Only we the people are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. Governments are not. Consequently, in congruence with Marbury versus Madison, all latter construction based upon the Organic Act of 1871 is null and void, as is the Act. Said Act attempted to supplant our Republican form of government that our servants were entrusted to guarantee. This criminally created a foreign venue, a de facto sovereign state, proceeding under fiction of law. Any court resting upon said Act is a de facto court. Any judge acting under such fiction of law denies due process and is acting in excess of their judicial authority, in collusion, under color of law, thereby losing judicial immunity. Therefore, any judicial reliance upon said Act is injudicious. We, the people, being the authors of the law of the land, do not have civil liberties that are determined by the whims of legislators providing us with power of doing whatever the laws or the statutes permit. But to the contrary, we have natural liberty, which is the power of acting as one thinks fit without any restraint or control unless by the law of nature. In other words, liberty from all human legislated law. From May 2015 through September 2016, the grand jury served the following documents and defendants did not answer. Grand jury filed and served 26 habeas corpuses. The grand jury filed and served 56 show causes and information concerning the illegality of non-judicial foreclosures. On May 15, 2015, the grand jury served a writ quo warranto upon county sheriffs, federal special agents in charge, U.S. marshals, joint chiefs of staff, governors, federal district courts, state assemblymen, state senators, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. On May 20, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses upon 3,133 county sheriffs. On May 23, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses upon all state and federal judges. On May 27, we served the mandamus is concerning martial law upon county sheriffs, special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, joint chiefs of staff, governors, federal district courts, state assemblymen, state senators, U.S. House of Representatives, and U.S. Senate. On May 29th, the grand jury served mandamus is concerning the Second Amendment upon all of the same. On May 3rd in 2015, the grand jury served mandamus is concerning terrorism upon, again, all of the same. On June 6, 2017, 2015, the grand jury served mandamus is concerning subversion upon, again, all of the parties involved. On July 10, 2013, the grand jury served mandamus is on all 50 governors. On July 20th, 2015, the grand jury served mandamus is on the United States Supreme Court. On October 14, 2015, the grand jury served information on all state and federal judges. On November 15, 2015, the grand jury served information concerning the abuse of SWAT upon the county sheriffs, and again, to all the other parties involved. On November 15, 2015, the grand jury served a show cause order upon the federal district clerks and judges. On February 18, 2016, the grand jury served mandamus upon all 50 governors. On February 26, 2016, the grand jury served information, again, on all of the players involved. On September 26, 2016, grand jury again served information concerning martial law upon all of the people involved. On December 14, 2016, the grand jury, also known as the above said tribunal, on behalf of the people, opened an action in the United States Supreme Court, in the United States Court for the Northern District of New York, case number 116CB1490, for the purpose of proceeding under the judicial auspices of the court, and copied the United States Supreme United States Attorney General Jeff Sessions for the assistance of the United States Attorney in order to pursue further investigations of high crimes revealed and to prosecute indicted individuals identified in our investigations. In these filings, the grand jury reported that within our government resides a system which has constricted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines the military, diplomatic, intelligent, economic, scientific, and political operations that serve a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on the covert means for expanding its spheres of influence. On infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidations instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. This system was constructed by the deep state, whose preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War, in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy would ever hope to wish or to wish to match. On January 16, 2017, we the people served redress of grievances and reported said conspiracy upon the United States House of Representatives and the Senate, the United States Supreme Court, the President of the United States, and all 50 state governors. With the exception of President Donald J. Trump, who has taken action, we have been met with a deafening silence from the United States House of Representatives, the United States Senate, the United States Supreme Court, the federal judiciaries, and all 50 governors. On December 14, 2016, we the people filed an action against the defendants in the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York, and that also served as a depository for the grand jury documents so as to proceed under judicial auspices of the court, and marked the official beginning of this trial. And this filing is the end of that trial, being a writ demanding restoration of the law of the land via a decision and order by the common law tribunal. This writ, decision, and order will be filed under both the statutory number of 116CV1490 and the common law and statutory form bearing the number 1776-1789-1791-2019 that we assigned. As the judiciary always does, they conceal our natural law courts, extorted a fee for the operation of a court of record, and then transported our court of justice to a de facto equity quasi-court of injustice operating under jurisdictions unknown. As bar-controlled courts always do, in order to maintain the status quo, the attorneys conspired with Judge Kahn to trespass on a common law case under a common law tribunal, that is, the jury of the people, to conceal and use Rule 12 to silence the people. In response, on July 7, 2017, the grand jury filed a 7-count true bill of indictment against Judge Kahn for concealment, felony rescue, trespass upon the case, denial of due process, acting under the color of law in an attempt to seize control of the court, manufacturing an unlawful order, and aiding and abetting the enemy. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. Servants whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant are unfit to be the servants of a free people. We have warned our elected and appointed servants from time to time of attempts by their unlawful legislative and judicial actions to extend intolerable jurisdiction over a free and independent people. We have reminded them of their oaths and their duty to the same. We have appealed to their sense of honor and justice, and we have reminded them of our covenant with our Creator via the Declaration of Independence. And we have appealed to their conscience to disavow their usurpations of our unalienable rights. But they have closed their ears to the voice of justice and have remained silent when having a duty to speak, which can only be equated to fraud. We, therefore, the sureties of the peace for the people of the United States of America, via this tribunal, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the righteousness of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these states, solemnly publish and declare that these United States are and of a right ought to be free and independent states. Okay, we're going to end it there. That is the end of part two. This will take one more part, part three, which we'll pick up here on page 32. And it starts off with our decision and order by the authority vested in we the people by God. And so we have about another 15 more pages to read. We've been reading about 15 pages per part. So we'll pick up next week on this final part. Okay, Jen, do we have any questions or any announcements?
We have a number of questions. Some of them came through as statements, and they have a little question at the end.
All right, can you get a little closer to your mic? You were much better before, but you're a little low right now. I sense you getting close. Oh, yeah, that's great. Okay. Walk the wall now.
We'll keep them awake. This fellow got tangled up in a BK case with his ex-wife. I don't know if that's bankruptcy, I assume. And it was filed, and a motion for relief and so on and so forth. And it got moved for cause to federal court in two separate actions. And the judge ruled in his favor, so he figured that was the first time that we had been supported in court. And he said he would get together the case number and all that sort of thing so we could take a look at it. Now, he didn't actually make or ask any questions. He just wanted us to know that he had been successful. So
okay.
I guess the first one with a question is... What is the time frame of courses to become a jury administrator, the due process to do it right, as no human on earth can know it, before death and make a difference larger than oneself?
And I'm not too sure I understand the question. Read the first part of that question. I'm not sure exactly what they're asking. But in the first part of that question, I think I understood something.
What is the time frame of courses to become a jury administrator?
Okay, I guess stop right there for now.
Yep.
Well, I'm not sure exactly from what perspective they're asking the question. How long does it take to go through the courses, I guess, is the question. We know that our civil course is about 120 hours. It's got a lot of video and audio. And our constitutional course, well, our government by consent course is probably just as long. So that's pretty much how, you know, the amount of time take to go through those two courses. And then there's the militia course that we have. That should be relatively quick. You could probably do that pretty quickly on a Saturday or something. I don't know. I never thought about calculating the hours on that, but I don't. It's not that long. And of course, the major things that individuals need to take all those courses if they're going to be an administrator. And there's more. I'm not sure that we're going to get another course up. That possibility is there. Time is tight right now, but we possibly could, or maybe eventually we will. But we are writing a book in order to, it's a handbook for administrators for, you know, calling together and both the grand jury and or the trial jury for orientation. They will be sworn in by the judge, but we the people require a vow to their creator to participate. And we've got a lot, we're working on a lot of different, got some videos, a lot of good videos that are very helpful in understanding things that will be shown to people who are coming in to become a jurist, whether they're grand jury or trial jurist, but for the jurists. And also some written instructions and informations, probably, you know, 6 to 8 hours for orientation for either of the two juries. And then they would be given the date when to come in for whatever the situation may be, whether it's indictment considerations or court case. And then, of course, we will remain here. You know, National Liberty Alliance will be here for assistance for anybody has questions or maybe something we didn't cover or something we need to investigate a little further or assist them in one way or another to advise them and so on. Also, we'll continue organizing the communications between all of the groups on the county level, which where they can share different things and thoughts that have happened to them on their level, maybe something unique on their in their counties, and maybe share with others so that they may want to act likewise or however it is that they feel that they need to respond or go forward. And we got quite a few. Well, again, we're putting together a book, so we haven't completed that, and we're also putting together videos. At some point in time, we may come with a more focused test or a course to go through, shall I say, really, for administrators alone. But again, maybe not. The book may be enough, and access for information and you know, questions that we maybe be able to help be helpful with. So we'll be here again every Monday for that purpose. As the people take control of their government through consent, their consent on their grassroots level. And again, for anybody that's new amongst us, we're developing administrations for individuals in each county in a paid position. Right now, people are being paid for this service, but you know, it's the judges and prosecutors that handle this. And clearly, the hen house should not be in charge of this because we see all the corruption. And it's impossible to go, it seems so anyway, maybe there's a place you can get access to it, but it's impossible any place that we've found to try to get to the grand jury. These people block them, and they have to block them, otherwise they'd probably find themselves in jail because there'd be people coming and complaining about all of their, you know, corruption. So, you know, they control those things, and we need to take it away from them. And so, again, these positions will be paid positions, a career position. And, of course, the National Liberty Alliance also will at some point in time have paid positions for the purpose of advising and dealing with different problems and continuing in the education and communications and organization across the nation, bringing people together. And National Liberty Alliance always will, you know, become less as the people on the grassroots level become more. You know, right now we are organizing and working through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, particularly to go after enemies both foreign and domestic within our government on the highest levels. And but at some point in time, when the swamp is finally drained and the people have become educated and prepared to be able to take these positions on a county level, then they will increase and NLA will decrease in any kind of an authority. National Liberty Alliance, which has brought together grand juries across this entire nation, in the sense that of all the people, we have over 8,500 members, and whenever we call for a grand jury to come together, you know, it could be 50, 60, or 100, or even 200 people that might come together for a grand jury decision, you know, to hear a case. And of course, it is, you know, on a grand jury decision, it's 50-plus percent rules, and pretty much most of our decisions have been almost unanimous all the time. Maybe one person here or there occasionally might go against what is being asked in order for indictments against judges. We've indicted quite a few judges. But again, National Liberty Alliance and the focus of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which again is all the people, that grand jury will cease to be once we get rid of enemies, foreign and domestic, within our government. And then, of course, the people need to take this control on the grassroots level in every county. All right, what other questions do we have?
Okay. The next one is sort of like the first one that makes a statement about 18 U.S.C. Section 242 of the U.S. Code, which is unannotated Title 18 crimes and criminal procedures or the deprivation of rights under color of law. And then it proceeds to list the whole section of code and has a question, who shows law officers the code or the law?
Who shows what?
Who shows law officers the law?
No, I'm not sure if they mean, I presume they mean law officers, meaning code officers, the local police, which would be code enforcement officers, really. I mean, they do also deal with things of justice, so-called, anyway. It's up to the people to correct this. You know, there's power in numbers to begin with, and there's extreme power in knowledge. The more you can know, the more power you can have. And the more people knows that know, the more power we, the people, will have. And, of course, that's what this is all about that we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, is to try to raise the consciousness of the people to realize, you know, what their heritage is and what the true law of the land is, and what's the difference between equity and law, the powers and the authorities of the United States Supreme Court, which is limited, and the powers and the authorities of the 94 federal district courts, which again is limited, and the difference between all of that and law, which is natural law, and so working through all those things. Can you repeat the question so I can try to...
Okay,
respond a little clearer?
Who shows law officers and the law?
Okay, I remember. All right, so the only way this is going to be corrected, it's got to first come up from the grassroots. We need to educate our sheriffs. The sheriff is one that's going to correct the problem. Let me give you an example. You know, once the sheriff has knowledge, and if you're being abused by a code enforcement officer or the village, town court, or something of that nature, it's up to the sheriff to come and protect the individual. Okay. There was one video I saw recently. I believe it was a sheriff, and he's talking with the local community. I guess they were creating some legislation or some ordinances or something in the town, and they were going to be doing something. I forget exactly what it was, but that sheriff, I believe it was a sheriff or a deputy or something, stepped up to the podium and said, look, you know, you can make all these laws and do all these things, but hey, we're not going to enforce it. We're certainly going to protect all these people behind me from being abused by these particular laws or codes or statutes or whatever it is that they've written. See, there's a sheriff who understood his power. There's a sheriff who exercised his authority and shut him right down. A short story of something that took place a little north of me some years ago. I know I've mentioned this story before. Where there was a the governor was on one side of the lake, and they were having something going on over there, and Liberty Groups was on the other side of the lake. I didn't make it up, this particular one. And so anyway, the governor called the police, I guess, and to have the Patriots on the other side of the lake removed. And one of the Patriots called the sheriff, and the sheriff came up and knocked down the barriers that the police put up and told the police to take a hike and told the people, you can continue as you are. And again, there is a sheriff who understood his power and authority. The police will not go up against the sheriff. They know. Even the governor won't go up against the sheriff. Matter of fact, here in New York, they tried to take the control of getting gun permits from the sheriff. All the sheriffs here in New York, there's 62 counties. Not that we have 62 sheriffs, we lack 7 of them, which we have to work on fixing because they've appointed sheriffs in 7 of the counties here in New York. Well, they're all down by New York City, 5 boroughs of New York City, Westchester County, and I think one county out in Long Island. But anyway, the sheriff said no, they're not going to give it. And they all got together, the sheriffs here in New York, and agreed, the majority, there was a couple of them, I don't know whether they didn't attend or what, but most of the sheriffs came together and agreed, and they refused to give the information that they wanted concerning people who had weapons. They wanted to know who had weapons, because they were working towards a lot more gun control here in New York. We have the SAFE Act and all this other BS stuff. So anyway, we did talk, I know we went down to talk to our sheriff here in Dutchess County, and he said, the big question we want to know if, they start seizing guns or if I have a weapon, I'm in a car and some officer wants to take it away from me, what are you going to do about it? And he said, well, he gave his card, gave all of us his card and said, just call me and I'll take care of it. So he wouldn't allow that either. So again, if we can get these sheriffs educated, they can stop governors, they can stop, because it's their job. They can stop anybody, any federal agent that comes into their county. They can stop anyone. It's their job to protect the people's rights and unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. And so the key, again, to all these things is education. Reality is the way one perceives it. And if you perceive yourself under the civil law, then that's your reality. You're a slave. If you perceive yourself under the natural law, and that's your reality, and you have liberty. You're a free individual. So it's a state of mind to begin with, and you have to exercise that state of mind, and we have to train particularly our sheriffs, and we have a plan for that too. Some people want to kind of rush real quickly to their sheriffs, and maybe they can articulate things well, maybe they can pull them over to their side, and so on and so forth. We've talked with quite a few sheriffs and heard stories from different sheriffs, and we put together a plan. And first you have to establish a group within the county to start working, first of all, with creating the administrations for the grand juries and the trial juries, working towards the process of the committee men to take control of the political process on the grassroots level, and also coming together and recognizing that we're all part of the militia. Every individual is part of the militia, start organizing the unorganized militia and eventually the organized militia throughout our states. And these are the things that we need to do. And part of that plan is at a certain point in time when you know, get so many people together and you've accomplished certain goals and you've come up with resolutions. We're going to assist people. We've already put that together too. As a matter of fact, you go under people's duty here, organizing your county right here, gives a lot of information on organizing your county. And also we put together some resolutions that people can start off with, and then adding your own resolutions and tweak things the way, you know, people see fit on the county level. We're free and independent people. We need to govern from the county level. We need to control those people who govern for our sakes, the necessary things that need to be taken care of, commercial activities, the government itself, the different agencies, and so on and so forth. So once you're at a certain point, and I would think maybe a couple of months in, you know, it'll depend on how well you organize the county, at some point within a few months, then we have a plan to then go and talk with the sheriff to bring him, to kind of reel him in. But the key is to set the stage and everything in such a way so that when the sheriff comes to visit the group and to see what's going on, and you do a special presentation with him, he will understand what you're doing. He will, you know, and again, we can give him literature and information, and he'd be much more receiving of the people that approach him with these things. We have approached sheriffs who are very, very ignorant to the Constitution, where one sheriff particular says, well, you know, I just don't know the law. I mean, you know, he doesn't know it. I mean, how could that be? Well, all these elected people don't know the law. So they have to count on their on the minions there, the minions of the New World Order, which are the bar attorneys, particularly the county attorney. That's what the sheriff or anybody would call if they needed some information on how to respond to something in law, particularly sheriffs. And, of course, the bar attorney will give them things of civil law, not natural law. And they too know nothing about the Constitution. They too don't even appreciate the Bill of Rights and unalienable rights. They believe that the common law has been abrogated, and that's what they're taught in bar school. So again, the whole problem is ignorance. It's education. And education will get rid of ignorance. We have to train ourselves up and train our children up. Make sure we get all of this information into the schools, especially when children are young, and get this information fed to them. Because right now, they're being trained to be really great socialists, because that's what's going on in the schools today. And I know that firsthand. And maybe not every school, but as far as I know, it's every school. It's a problem, because they control the education as far as the curriculum is concerned. But anyway, this is what we the people have to do. It's work, and it's your duty. And if we don't do it, then once Trump leaves, the deep state will return eventually, and the same old will happen. It just repeats itself over and over. This is where our founding fathers started with the same problem, and England went through the same problem, and here we are, blessed with the opportunity to fix the problem. We have a window of opportunity. It's a very small window of opportunity. That small window of opportunity is during, of course, focuses in on Trump's time in New office. So we've got another 5 years, but we don't have 5 years to start doing things. We have 5 years to complete our work. So people need to step up and be ready to take these positions, take control, and have government by consent. Do it by knowledge. Get our sheriffs working for us. Shut down all these code enforcement officers running around ticketing everybody and robbing us of our money and our time. All of these people being put in prison, well, actually in the county jail. See, that's the other way they can deal with it. When these code enforcement officers bring these individuals over to their jail, because remember, the sheriff controls the county jail, and okay, well, where'd they come from? Who sent them? Oh, well, this village court. And they're putting them, he can set them loose right there and say that's not valid. It's an administrative court. They don't have the power, the authority to fine or incarcerate. They have administrative powers, and that goes according to regulations and statutes that control commercial activity, that control government agencies. It has nothing to do with we the people. But they've created a business out of it. It's RICO. But the sheriff can shut it all down. Judge Bork, those who remember who Judge Bork is back in the 80s, Judge Bork said, I don't remember if it was 80% or 90%. I'm pretty sure he was a high number. I'll use 80%, played on the safe side. 80% of the people in jail are there only because they opened their mouths. You see, once you make a plea in that court and you respond, you're giving them authority to go forward. You're acquiescing. You have to deny them jurisdiction. That worked a lot better in the 80s and the 90s and even maybe the first 10 years of 2000. But lately, it's become much more difficult. Last 10 years or so, maybe 15, it's become much more difficult. They start dealing with these problems with these judges and judge schools, preparing them on those, on us, patriots, ultimately, trying to exercise our rights and tell them to stop. So, anyway, what's the next question?
Well, kind of to go along with what you were talking about and the power of the county sheriff, as you know, the governor of the state of Michigan has been very oppressive, shut down just about everything in the state, even voting regulations on how close together people of the same family could be on a boat, to the point it basically brought things to a standstill. Well, I heard today that the sheriff of one of the western counties in Michigan stopped that and said, look, we're not doing this anymore. We're opening up the county. We're not obeying these COVID-19 orders anymore, and went ahead and opened up the county. Now, if Robert O is on the call tonight, he can fill in all the details on that. He's
okay.
The one that is up on that.
Robert, are you here?
If not, I can look him up after I get off.
Let's finish off what we have, and then we'll get Robert up if he wants to respond to this.
Then the next question comes from a member from California who was on a call last week, and she kept getting bumped off, so she didn't get her questions answered. So she was upset about that. She's been upset about the way Californians are being treated, like going into Walmart and told she couldn't enter, she didn't have a mask, and so on and so forth. And coming to find out that most of the beaches in California are closed, but one in Encinitas where she lives, it's okay to go to the beach, but you have to wear a mask. You can't sit on the sand. You've got to run, jog, or keep moving. And so she would like to help any way she can, and she is wanting to know what NLA is willing to do to help her in this battle against this injustice in California as well as elsewhere.
Well, clearly these tyrants are not really even paying attention. I mean, they're just using this. Or, matter of fact, they got their marching orders to do these things. So, but I'm talking about these governors and some other people. But clearly they're not paying attention either, because the safest place in the world to be is on the beach on a sunny day, because the virus can't live any more than seconds under the sun. And so even if someone was to cough as it's going through the air, it'd probably be dead before it lands on somebody, if it does. And of course, you have to take it into your mouth or through your eyes or some way. But so that really is the best place to be. They're kind of stupid to try to shut down a beach. And people, of course, we know enough to separate ourselves to some degree, as we've been doing. So that would probably take place on the beach too. But again, they're doing it for other reasons. I'd love to do something. I'd love to write some papers and get things going, but we need people to do some really serious research and bring the necessary documentations, and then we can maybe do something with a paper to a governor or someone and follow up with a potential indictment, if possible, depending on the case. So, but without more people volunteering their time to help us with different committees and research, we got lots of things we need to research, we'd be able to do a lot more. We have a couple of paralegals, so we need more paralegals. We can do more writing and a lot more things. So we'd love to do something, but it takes people to step up to do a lot of legwork and gathering information, getting and we, you know, to some degree, hopefully people would understand what they're looking for. We can explain it to them what we need to get in order to, you know, write a paper and also potentially have an indictment, at least call the grand jury for consideration and an indictment if necessary. So I guess that's where we're at that point.
Okay, she had one more comment here, which I find rather interesting. She claims that some sheriffs in California are also the coroner, which seems to be rather dangerous as well as illegal. Have you ever heard of such?
Well, I don't know whether it's dangerous or illegal. I'd have to think that out a bit. Maybe when Brent comes on, maybe he's thought that out a bit, and maybe he can respond to that. I have to think about that.
Well, think about the sheriff being in a gun battle, shooting several people, innocent bystanders or whatever, and then as the coroner finds out they died of coronavirus.
Coronavirus.
That can happen lately from what I've heard.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, again, I've never thought that out. I've never thought about that, and I haven't thought it out, so I'd have to think about it and research a little bit and think about it, really, to see what logical sense it might make or not make. I can kind of see maybe a conflict there, but again, when Brent comes on, maybe he can appreciate an answer for us. Sure. What's next?
This is from a person in California again who's trying to find an attorney there that will help with a CPS case. Claims he has all the documentation, several false allegations were made against him, and so on. So he's looking for help finding an attorney to represent him. He has lost his two small girls. CPS.
Yeah, you know, I've never even seen even bar attorneys trying their best to get the children back in any reasonable time. I mean, they're too destructive. You know, I don't really have anything to offer there. You know, we can work with them to try to do some things. We're doing a habeas corpus maybe for the children. We're doing that with people already. And indictments if they don't follow up and honor that habeas corpus. I mean, but what authority do these people think that they have to deny a habeas corpus, no matter who brings it up? And we're coming in from the perspective of a true organic common law grand jury, totally coming up from the land. And you know, bringing forward a habeas corpus. I mean, who do these people think they are that they can deny someone of that? You know, habeas corpus is requested because the person is not getting due process and want to bring that before the court and say, you know, prove that you have jurisdiction over this individual. Because that's really where they're failing, is they don't have the jurisdiction over these people. They're robbing their children. And the APS is robbing their parents, you know, the elderly, and taking away their life's earnings and everything, and just spending it down. RICO on steroids. Family court is RICO, and the ABA for the adults, same thing. All RICO on steroids. It's the worst, most evil, disgusting process in our entire judicial system. You know, the second to that, I think, is the bankruptcy court. And the, what's that other one? The, goodness, I can't think of the name of it. But in any event, that's the worst. So they're really stuck between a rock and a hard place. If they want us to assist them, we'll assist them with a habeas corpus. As fast as they can move on it, it may take us a couple of days to react and get it out. And, you know, they have to respond within 3 days after receiving it, with a day of grace, let's say. The judge can go up to 20 days to give the other side more time. There's no reason to give 20 days. Maybe they need to give someone 2 or 3 more days for whatever reason. But that is the decision of the judge. And then at that point, the judge is to do his duty and protect the individual's right of due process. And he must truly and honestly look at the case and see, do these people have jurisdiction over this person? Can they get due process there? And if the answer is no, he has to release the prisoner right there on the spot. And your children are prisoners if they've been taken. So it's a horrible thing to be in that position. I almost fell into that some 20 or so, 25 years ago, 24, 3, 4, whatever, almost 25 years ago. Any other questions?
Yes, I have argued with a family member over the sheriff being or having the authority to convene a grand jury. The family member disagreed that the sheriff does not. Can you clarify this? Also, the Ninth Amendment of the Bill of Rights is often overlooked and not thoroughly discussed. Could you please elaborate on this obscured but important amendment?
Well, it's very interesting to begin with, because before 1970 on the federal level, U.S. attorneys didn't have statutory authority to call forth a jury, a grand jury or a trial jury. And they received that authority in statutes in the 70s. You know, first of all, you know, if there's a situation, even through a federal case, and they need to do a criminal case, they still have to go into the county where the quote-unquote crime took place, or the you know, the abuse took place, whatever it may be. Usually, it would be because the only power and authority really have to go after individuals, people involved in commercial activities, interstate activities, and agencies, different federal agencies, abuse of power, and those things, which could be criminal. But that brings you right back down to a court of record, to a natural law court where it's supposed to be judged in. Now, those people can be judged under those codes because they have agreed to those codes when they went to work for an agency or got involved in the commercial activities. And so they pre-agree to that, and they're given certain special authorities or jurisdictions. So they've agreed to those terms. But the grand jury has the power of nullification if they don't like a particular law being applied against someone, or maybe they don't believe it should be applied against this person, or maybe it's too strong or not strong enough. They can do whatever they please. I mean, what happened out west? I mean, we see, looking into movies in the past, you know, which tried to, you know, talk about stories out west and things of that nature, of course, highly exaggerated, but nevertheless, it was the sheriff. It was the sheriff who would pull the posse together. It was the sheriff who would call the grand jury together, and then it would be the sheriff who would hold the prisoner over until the circuit judge came around to hear the case. I think when Brent comes on, he could probably expand a lot more better than I can on these things. But you look at the people can call forth the grand jury. Any one person could really call forth the grand jury in a sense, because we all have the right to have access to our local grand jury. And any of us should be able to go down to our courthouse in the county, for the state court, and ask, when is the next time the grand jury is going to be meeting? Can I get on to, get onto the agenda there? And they should be given access. Well, why do they want to prevent the people from having access? So in a sense, people can call a grand jury, they can go talk to them. Clearly, the sheriff can do it. And clearly, we the people have done it. We the people, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, have risen from ourselves, from amongst the people, true organic, from the land, in order to bring justice back into our nation again. Going up against enemies, both foreign and domestic, in high places, federal, state, in the courts, political, I mean, all over the place. It's a mess. So, of course, the coroner could call the grand jury together, and there are statutes in all states, and now on the federal level, that gives the attorneys, certain attorneys, the U.S. attorneys on one level, the prosecuting attorneys on state levels or county levels, they've been given statutory authority to call forth a grand jury, and that's fine. We can live with that. But as far as tending to the grand jury, orientating the grand jury, protecting the grand jury, that's the people's job. We have to be there. We have to make sure that the juries are not tainted. I mean, just go read a federal, you can read this on our website. We have it up there. We don't have a paper on these things, on the federal handbook for jurists. I mean, it's an abomination, a pure abomination. They want to know, do you own a gun? Have you ever owned a gun? What TV, what news stations do you watch? Can you imagine those questions? That is on in the federal book for the jurists. I couldn't believe it, but it's there. Things that has none of the people's, none of the business of the court. Because what they're doing, of course, is they're stacking the grand jury. They're doing a psychological evaluation on the people. And they're stacking the juries, the trial juries and the grand juries. Again, it's an abomination. All right, anything else?
If the sheriff can trump the state governor regarding these unconstitutional mandates related to the coronavirus, how would you recommend we convince the sheriff of this authority and then recommend how we can reestablish those freedoms under such wraps? For example, what law can we point to?
Well, look at, again, education is required for that. I think I've expounded upon that just 10 minutes ago or whatever it was just earlier on. So what I said earlier, is the same thing here. And in order to get your sheriff educated, you know, you have to approach them in the right way. You have to be active within the county, and you have to be grassroots. And he has to see you as constituents. He has to see you as, honorable in whatever it is you're trying to do on the political or judicial level. So he has to feel comfortable with that. And that's why, you know, we don't want to do this too prematurely. Some people think they can do this, and maybe they can. I don't know. You know, we went to the School of Hard Knocks up here trying to work this out, and you know, we've established a sort of a plan on how to approach the sheriff. But you have to organize yourself first, get a few people together, and you don't necessarily need a lot of people to go approach the sheriff. I mean, if you have a half a dozen or a dozen people participating at that point, and you've been orientated yourself in the things of what we're doing and the plans we have going, and then you get a hold of our plan, which is still in writing, okay? But our plan on approaching the sheriff, and what kind of, on that particular meeting, you're going to want to show a short video, maybe, something on the power and the authority of the sheriff, of course, on common law, the posse. I mean, a few different subjects, I'm sure, to get together and have some good literature. Of course, you want to have a copy of the Constitution, an offering of a free course up on National Liberty Alliance. They can take the courses we have. We have the civil law course, but very particularly we have government by consent course, which covers a lot of these things. And they have the militia course up there that they can take. And so we have to educate them as much as we have to educate ourselves. And the people need to realize it's not what they know that's going to hurt them, but it's what they think they know and don't know that's going to hurt you. So really be careful. If you're going to approach the sheriff, you're only going to get one shot at it, probably, you know, as far as the sheriff looking to you as a group of people. You want to do it right and really plan it. And that's the only way you're going to do it. We've tried to educate lots of sheriffs through faxing information. But I don't think that worked very well. I think a lot of our paper may be too legal to them or lawful. You know, talked about the Constitution. We didn't get into, you know, codes and statutes or anything. But nevertheless, you know, I think a lot of them will approach their attorney, the county attorney, talk with them, and of course they'll bash us, and that's it. We're done. So again, we need to do it from a local level. Needs to be done properly, and you need to educate yourself before you think you can educate the sheriff. Anything else? Jen, you didn't flip your switch yet. Back. Oh, I think we lost Jen. Jen, you still with us? All right, I guess we lost. There you go.
Hold on a minute, John. I'm just talking to the sheriff and to Robert. I'll get right back to you.
All right. Okay. Well, you got your mic open here, Jan. So I'm going to move on, and then we'll talk to the sheriff or to Robert or anybody. We'll just intervene with Brent. Brent, are you here and ready to go? I see you're here. Brent? Unmute yourself, Brent. I can see that Brent's here. Let me see if I can unmute him. Brent, can you hear me? Let's try it now. There you go.
You know, okay. I realize what it is, and I know what's happening with others. You've got all this stuff you're trying to keep track of on your screen, and then you can't find the mute.
Yeah, I know.
I know you know that. I'm discovering. But
it's terrible.
Low on the update. I got too much stuff open, but I'm here. My name is Brent Allen Winters. Thank you, John.
Well, let me introduce you, and I don't know if you were listening in, maybe you can expand some more on a question goodness, what was it? I forget what it was about. Maybe
it was
Jam
about
coming.
The sheriffs and the coroners, and one of them was sheriff.
Oh, yeah, right. That's it. So anyway, Brent Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, website commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, John, and thank you all of NLA for allowing me to make a few comments. My comments are my own. They may or may not agree with points of view of the leadership of NLA, but as always, they're kind enough to let me say a few words. Coroners and sheriffs. Sheriffs and coroners. These are a couple of positions that are unique. That means there's nothing else like them in the world in our common law tradition. Our common law tradition. There's only just a handful of countries that are like us. And in short, it's the English-speaking world. We're different than all the rest of the world. We have sheriffs and coroners. We have counties. We have townships. We have local rule in ways other people don't. And sheriffs and coroners are a big part of that. I made a public pronouncement or post just yesterday. And this is something my brother said when we were in Effingham County, and his little brother, that's me, his little brother was running for Congress, and he was there. And he ran into an immigrant from England. And I heard him say to this immigrant, because this immigrant was asking what we were doing, why were we being so friendly to everybody? And of course, everybody wasn't friendly to us, but we had a job to be friendly. And he said, you're complaining, but he said, America is the only common law country in the world that exists by forceful demand. All the rest of the common law countries exist by fawning request of permission. You just exist by permission. Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the Cook Islands, Tasmania, Belize, Liberia, all of those countries, Nigeria, all those former British colonies exist by permission. The United States is the only one, the only country, set of colonies become states that exist because we made a demand for it. They wouldn't grant it, and so we went to war. Now that, friends, neighbors, and kin, has given us a different point of view. And don't think it hasn't. The way you begin gives you a different point of view. We have sheriffs. And by and large, we're jealous of those positions because they are local positions. There was a time in the English-speaking world when sheriffs and coroners were appointments from the sovereign government, from the crown, or some central government. Our sheriffs and coroners in America are not appointed by the governor, as they used to be, well, by the chief man over in England. We elect them locally. Now, in early England, before the Norman invasion of 1066, sheriffs and coroners were elected. The Anglo-Saxons and the Anglo-Danes elected their sheriffs and coroners locally. After the Norman invasion, the king said, I'll appoint the sheriffs, because I want somebody to ride herd on the counties that's loyal to me. You see how that works. Yeah. Well, we got over to this country, and we said, no, we're going back to the old system where sheriffs and coroners are elected locally. Well, in California, funny place, I know there's places in California that have what they call under-sheriffs. They have a sheriff, that's called the high sheriff. And then they have an undersheriff. That's called the, well, the undersheriff. I almost said low, high, low. It's high sheriff. That's the sheriff that gets elected. But then there's an undersheriff. And some of these counties, some of the counties in California are as big as some of the states back on the East Coast, so they need to have a sheriff on one side of the county, and then they need to have an undersheriff on the other side of the county that has the powers of the sheriff. And some of the counties, true also in places like Arizona, they'll have two courthouses. It's just too far to go to the courthouse otherwise. Well, that's no big deal, but things get uglier. Of course, California has a way of getting ugly. It's getting real ugly out there right now. In 49 of the 58 of California's counties, 49 out of 58 California counties, there are 58 counties in California, the coroner is also the elected sheriff. You say, well, what's the big deal? Well, let's say somebody on the sheriff's department, some deputy, blows somebody away just because he's because this sheriff's deputy has an attitude problem. Does that ever happen? Yeah, it happens more often than you'd like to think. Well, in such a case, who's the coroner that's going to rule on how that happened? Well, it's going to be the sheriff, because he is the coroner. Is he going to protect the deputy? Oh, probably, because he'll think it'll protect him, you see. That's called a conflict of interest. So way back in the year 2008, 12 years ago, there was a fellow by the name of Daniel Lee Humphreys, 47 years old. And Humphreys crashed his motorcycle while he was being chased by the California Highway Patrol for speeding. Of course, that's the way it always ends up. When you're speeding and running from the cops, you'll end up piling it up in a fence row someplace. That's what he did. So he lived through the crash somehow. And the bike and him laying there, and he started to stand up. And how injured he was, I don't know. Don't know that anybody knows at this point. He started to stand up, and the California Highway Patrol officer shot him 31 times with a taser. 31 times with a taser. And that subjected him to 2.5 minutes of shock. He collapsed. And later, he died. Well, what happened in that case? Well, who's the coroner? The coroner is the sheriff. Who shot the fellow? The deputy shot the fellow. The deputy worked for the sheriff. So the coroner has to make a ruling on the cause of death. And what do you think the sheriff ruled the cause of death was? I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. Three guesses and the first two don't count. He ruled his death a mere accident. Well, then all that gets swept under the rug. Why? Because the sheriff's office controls the release of evidence, and they often don't release anything if they think it would cause them trouble. How do I know? Well, it happens all the time. Happens all the time? No. All doesn't mean all in that case. Happens a lot, put it that way. Happens a lot. The county in that case got sued. The family sued for wrongful death, and the county settled out of court for money. Well, when they had that wrongful death case against the deputy, against the sheriff's department, against the coroner, really, because the sheriff is the coroner, and let's see, it was what I say, 49 out of 58 counties? 58 counties in California, and 49 of them, the sheriff is the coroner. There's always one more thing a fella has to do. Right now I've got to plug in because I'm out of juice. Hang on, if you would. Bear with me while we're experiencing, as they used to say on television, technical difficulties. Here we go. I'm back in. Well, that was the first thing. Is that right? Well, no, that's not right. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. Why do they do this? Why do they make the sheriff the coroner? Why don't they have two separate offices like most of the rest of the country? What's their excuse? Their excuse is it saves money. Now, here's a problem. Here's a big problem. I see this in the courts, too. Do we need more courts or less courts? We need more courts. Lots more courts. We don't have enough courts. But to save money, that's what the excuse is. To save money, we're not going to have any more courts. We don't want any more judges. Well, how do I know we need more courts? Because people got disputes. How are you going to settle your disputes? If you don't open the courts, people end up hurting one another. That's why we have courts. Why do we have courts? So people won't get in fights and hurt one another. We can find a resolution for our problems we have in a procedure we call battle by trial, and then that fills the void and we don't end up having so much trial by battle. That can get real messy. Happens anyway, and if the courts persistently ignore the law, it seems that it's getting worse. People aren't going to want to go to court anymore. And if people don't want to go to court anymore, or if they can't get into court anymore, what are they going to do? They're going to settle their differences. How are they going to do it? They're going to do it in some instances, unfortunately, trial by battle, instead of going to court to battle by trial. That's exactly what will happen. It keeps happening. We try to lessen that as much as possible by doing what? By making the courts absolutely open. Look at the progression of the evil empire. Look at the progression of what the useful idiots of it have done. What the evil one himself has orchestrated among his useful idiots. Go back to 2000. The courts set up some kind of metal detecting devices, and they had to shake people down getting in the courthouse. I know one courthouse at home, county board president, had been living in that county for all his life, been going into that courthouse all his life. He would not submit to the metal detecting machine, and he quit his position as county board president. He'd been there for years. He said, I've been going into this courthouse since I was a boy, walking in and out freely. I'm not going to be a part of this. And he never was. And his name was Sims. I think he's gone now. He was an elder. He was an elder at the... it was the Blue Water Hard Shell Baptist Church, if I remember right. I didn't go there. I'm not a hard shell Baptist by any stretch. But he was a good old fella. He just wasn't going to tolerate it. Is there something wrong with that kind of wisdom? Wisdom of age? No, there's nothing wrong with it. But anyway, they made it hard to get into the courthouses. People don't go into the courthouses the way they used to. Shucks, you could get arrested just trying to get into a courthouse. Not to mention the hassle you have to go through, and you'll say to me, oh, Brent, it's dangerous. They've got to shake people down, make sure they aren't bringing weapons in. Well, explain this to me. How is it that for 100 and 200 and 225 years in this country, people have been wandering in and out of courthouses without any problem to speak of? And if you want to come in and listen, you come in and listen. If you want to get up and leave, you get up and leave. If you want to bring your children in, you bring your children in. Oh, this started slowly. I remember bringing in my children. I got called for jury duty in a murder case. Fella down at the name of the place where he lived was Bullskin, Bullskin. Bullskin was on the Wabash River, accused of murdering his wife. And he was a union thug on the other side of the river in Terre Haute. And I got called for jury duty. And I got there a little late, and there I had the jury impaneled, had my little children with me. Just stair steps. I brought them in. We sat down in the back. And the union boys had hired a big lawyer from the big city to come in and defend their thug. And he looked around. A great big heavy-set fella. So big he had to waddle. Looked like a rough one. But he stood up and he turned around. He saw my children. And he walked up to Judge Anderson. I heard, and he said something, I didn't hear it, and Judge Anderson said loud, the courtroom was crowded, he said loud, those children can stay in here as long as they want, as long as their parents want, as long as they don't make a lot of racket. He was trying to take control of the courtroom, trying to throw children out. You have to ask yourself, why was he doing that? Well, it's got progressively worse. That was way back in the, that was back in the 80s. Well, it's got progressively worse. Then they put in the machines. And now, you see it. You can't hardly get into a courthouse now. They're de facto shut down. And where courthouses are de facto shut down, you can't impanel a jury readily. You're under martial law. We are under martial law. Interviewed a professor last week. He's going to be on again Thursday. Professor of government from Masters University. And he told me, when I asked him, are we under martial law, professor? He spent his life studying Constitution and studying the founders, wrote a book about the 8 most influential founders, answered the question whether or not they were deist or whether or not they were Christian or what were they. That was a fascinating answer. He's going to be on again Thursday, by the way, on Patriot Soapbox, and we're going to follow up on Romans 13. I want you to be there. Romans 13. He's going to unpack Romans 13 from his point of view. I don't know if I'm going to agree with him, but we're going to talk about it, and we're going to field
questions. Yeah, you might want to, what day is that going to be? Is it going to be Thursday?
Thursday at, it'd be 8 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Pacific to 10 o'clock. That'd be 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I saw the first half of that. That guy was very interesting. And what about, oh goodness, can you give him the web address to go to? Do you know it, or should I look it up?
Well, you know, I've got a link. I get confused. It must be
pretty popular. It's a different link for you, though.
Yeah. Well, it's different for me. That's right. But it must be pretty popular because when I go to try to find it, there's just many options. And what I understand is so many different outlets have tapped into Patriot Soapbox that it's hard to find the one that works the easiest. But it is Patriot Soapbox, Patriot Soapbox. And if you scroll down, it'll say live someplace, and if you click on the right buttons, it's kind of self-explanatory, and you can listen. And that's Thursday. We're going to be on.
Well, also, they can go to YouTube also and put in Patriot Soapbox, and I'm sure they'll find it that way too. So, but
thank you, John. Thank you, and that's right because it's live YouTube.
Yeah.
And we didn't have time to get to Romans 13.
Yeah, he was fascinating. It was a fascinating interview or conversation. It was an interview, more or less, matter of fact.
Well, I wanted him to come back on, and so I sent him the chat that was compiled so he could see what people were saying. I sent it to him. I said, I want you back. I'm going to get to Romans 13. Well, he didn't hesitate. He liked it. So we'll talk about it. Lord willing, talk about a few other things. But he wrote a book about the 8 founders. He says they aren't deists, but he says they aren't Christians as we would understand that today either. He coined a term to say what those 8 men were, what those 8, you know, Washington, Madison, Tom Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, James Wilson, Gouverneur Morris, Gouverneur, that's governor in France, that was his name, that wasn't his title. Those kind of fellows, the ones we hear about most often. Well, let's talk about the grand jury. We talked about this other thing about the coroner and the sheriff being the same person. No, that's bad business. That's contrary to our common law. California claims that they're doing this to save money. And that's no excuse. There's some things government's justified to spend money on, and they're spending money on things they're not justified to spend money on according to our law, and they're not spending money on things that they need to be spending money on, like 2 different offices, coroner and sheriff, so one can ride herd on the other. Coroner is, of course, coroner becomes sheriff if something happens to the sheriff. It's a powerful office. But he's not responsible to do what the sheriff says. You read articles about stuff like this, and it'll say, well, some say it's a conflict of interest. No. Some say, no, it's just a conflict of interest. You playing me for stupid? Like I can't see that? How could it not be a conflict of interest when it's the same person? There's a lot of conflicts of interest out there where you got 2 different people. What if the sheriff's deputy was the coroner? Would that be a conflict of interest? Yes. But for the sheriff and the coroner to be the same office, and then him and his deputies murder people, And then the coroner ruled it's an accident. Of course, that's the sheriff making the ruling. Come on. Quit talking stupid. I get so weird.
You know what? As a matter of fact, when you think about it, they're two different offices, and you can only hold one office at a time. So.
Good point. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like saying, can you contract with yourself? And the answer is no. You can't be the promisor and the promisee at the same time. I promised myself that I would keep my New Year's resolutions. Well, we say stupid things like that, but it really is stupid. Can't do that. You cannot deal with your... One person cannot deal with himself in contract. That's axiomatic at law. Well, the other question was about the grand jury. Was there a question or just did we raise something? Does anybody know? Can anybody tell me what was said about the grand jury so I don't just talk about anything I want to? If you can't tell me, I might...
Yeah, I remember that. Jen. Do you remember?
No.
No?
I don't remember either.
No,
well,
if it comes to mind, I'll poke you.
I think one of the things that you mentioned about the grand jury was the sheriff can impanel the grand jury.
Oh, yeah, that was the big question, yeah. Okay. That was the big thing.
And I've heard this often, and I say this. Well, why not? Is he going to go to jail if he tries to do it? I say do it. Now, here's the thing about the grand jury. People go to law school. What are they taught about the grand jury? Absolutely zip, zero, goose egg, nothing, nada. Nothing. It's not even mentioned. They don't know anything about it. It's an utter secret. Yeah. So when the grand jury comes up, lawyers do not know how to deal with the grand jury. Well, how are you going to figure out if the grand jury subpoenas somebody to come and testify, what's the lawyer going to do? He didn't know what to do. He didn't know anything about it. He may think, well, I'll accompany him into the grand jury. No, you aren't going to do that. Because lawyers aren't allowed into the grand jury. So what do you have to do? And when I did this, the lawyer who suggested I did it, who was older than I and been at it for years, he said, Brent, if you do this, you'll be an expert on the, you'll be the expert around where you're at and maybe other places on the subject. I said, why is that? He said, because no lawyer ever does this. I said, does what? Well, goes to the grand jury with the witness, and sets outside and tells the witness, every time they ask you a question, come out and tell me what the question is and we'll discuss what the answer will be. So he goes in the grand jury room. I did this. He goes in the grand jury room. I'm sitting outside. What's your name? Here he comes out. They just ask me what my name is. I'm not exaggerating. I did this. Listen, if you're in front of the grand jury and somebody asks you what your name is, it's a shaking experience to be in front of the grand jury with every little question. He came out and said, they're asking me what my name is. And I had a card, a 3x5 card. And it's a grown man, 60 years old, a successful businessman, confident man. And they're going to try to send him to federal prison for a long time. Innocent he was. So he came out and said, they just asked me what my name was. I handed him a card, 3x5 card. On the 3x5 card, it said, objection, fifth. Objection, fifth. That's all it said. I said, read this to him. Two words. Well, when you're shook up, that's all you want to ask a fellow to do, and that's all he has to do. And so he read objection, fifth. Oh, you're not going to, the U.S. attorney was in there and said, you're not going to answer. No. So they asked him what his address was. He came back outside. He said, they're asking me what my address is. I said, well, I gave him the same card. I said, just say objection, fifth. Listen, when you're in a fight, when you're in the ring, and the evil empire and the minions of it are trying to beat your face to a pulp like they were his, you need to be able, after the first three-minute round, to come back to the corner, and you need to be encouraged a little bit. You need to be told everything's okay. You need to tell him, watch for the left hook. They're going to try to trick you into talking. They're going to try to do this. Keep your right hand up. Keep your left hand out there jabbing. Whatever you got to tell them. And that's what he would come out and tell me, and I would tell him simple things. It didn't get that complicated like it would in a real boxing match. But he didn't talk. The danger of that is, why do lawyers not do that? Because if lawyers do that, they may get indicted. That's why. You say, how do you know, Brent? Well, because it's happened to me. It happened to me. That's what happened. I got indicted. Why? Because they wanted to get me out of the way. So am I an expert on the subject? Well, let's put it this way. I know more probably than any other lawyer about how to do that particular thing. Did I pay a price for it? You better believe I paid a price for it. And they came after my license. That's what they did. And I got my license, so I guess I won that round. But this whole thing about the grand jury is so secretive, and it's kept secretive. It's kept away from lawyers. Lawyers don't have a clue what's going on. The only way you can find out is try to do things like that. Try to dive in and find out what in the Sam Hill is going on here. You're going to read a book about it? No, you're not going to read. You're not going to read a book that's going to tell you either. You'll read books where lawyers have tried to read cases about the grand jury and tell you what the Supreme Court has said and what the federal courts have said. That doesn't tell you anything either, because those people on the Supreme Court and those people on the federal appellate courts, etc., they know very little about the practice of law, and less every decade. They certainly never do that. I've tried to find out what the grand jury is, and I've worked hard at it. And I don't hesitate to say it at this point in my life. Shucks, I may as well say it. I'm old enough. Oh, I guess I could just live my life out and not say it, but I may as well say it. Somebody needs to do something. We all need to do something to demand and say, what is the grand jury? And the courts themselves have not even said. They're afraid to say. They don't know. There's a split in the opinions. Is the grand jury part of the federal court in the federal jurisdiction? Is it part of the federal court? Or is it totally separate from the federal court? Does the federal judge have the power to enforce the grand jury subpoenas? Or is this the job of the grand jury, period? So we're talking about the grand jury. Isn't it kind of funny? It's funny, yeah. Like, curious funny. Odd that Americans who have the grand jury, something, again, that only exists in common law countries, it's been done away with in England. 1935, they did away with it. Have been there for centuries. The reason we have it is because it's written down in our Constitution. Otherwise, it'd be gone here, too. They don't even have the grand, they don't have the grand jury. they don't use it in a lot of states now. Are you going to depend upon a prosecutor to decide who to prosecute? Well, the grand jury has been around since before the Norman Conquest. They had different names for it. I'm talking about over 1,000 years ago. I read about cases in the 1300s. In the 1300s, during the uprisings of the poor people that were starving. Well, there were people hung, but even Winston Churchill makes the comment. He says, you know, even back then, there were people hung, but nobody was indicted and tried without indictment from a grand jury, even way back then. Why do they have juries? What does the jury mean? What does the petit jury mean? What it means is we don't trust the judge. That's what it means. How do I know that? Well, isn't it blatantly obvious that we have juries because we don't trust a lone employee of the state to make a decision when it comes to a man's life, liberty, property, or combination thereof? That's exactly what it is. Well, I'm quoting, by the way. He who never quotes is never quoted. Justice Scalia called the judge. It was in a case, I was in a criminal case when this case was handed down. And he called the judge a lone employee of the state. He said, without the jury, we're trusting a lone employee of the state with this formidable power over the life, liberty, and property of men. We don't want to do that. No country, says Bagot, the British lawyer years ago, no country has ever lost its freedom that kept its jury. I posted something here recently. I'll end with this. I posted something on public media recently about the United States being a country by demand and force, and no other common law country is a country by demand and force except us. That's significant. We should turn our eyes towards our origin and look there for a sign. We're in a pickle. We've been duped. Americans have put their brains in 5-gallon buckets and fired 45 slugs into them. I'm watching. I'm amazed. They've got us running around like children at Halloween wearing masks, and we do this voluntarily. We look worse than children. Worse, much worse. Children aren't that stupid. God bless them. And they, even if they did do that, they have an excuse. They're naive. Well, I told you I was going to end with something. I didn't even remember. Oh, I know what it was. I posted something about America and about how stupid we're being. And I don't know what it was. But and also, I'm friends with people from Australia, and they have a common law club in Australia. I forget the name of it, but they invited me to be a part of it. And we can communicate, of course, and I'm able to watch what's going on down there as they try to encourage their government and their courts to follow our common law procedures. Common law is a set of procedures. Common law is due process. It's the way we do things that's important. And one of the ways we do things is we demand. We don't request. We don't petition jury trial. No, right in the pleading, the first pleading you make, you say jury trial demanded. It's not an option. We're telling you, court. We're telling you, Mr. Judge, I demand a jury trial. I'm not requesting it, by the way. I'm demanding it. Now, there are a lot of requests and petitions you file with the court, of course. You motion the court respectfully. And you respectfully, you still respectfully, but you demand jury trial. And you demand indictment by a grand jury. And he said something. I said, the Constitution, why do we do this? Because the Constitution says so, that's why. Not to mention, more importantly, I added, the Bible. Well, he was a heathen of some kind, and he came back and said, I think you'd do a lot better arguing and not, you do a lot better arguing how unreasonable all this is instead of arguing your Bible and your Constitution, he said. How do you respond to that kind of thing? He was obviously making fun of me. Making fun of me because I hold to the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, called the Bible, according to William Blackstone. And the laws of nature's God, the laws of nature's God in the Bible and the laws of nature, let me back up. The laws of, the Declaration of 76 says this, the laws of nature, unwritten, it's talking about what is unwritten in creation that we can observe, that's our common law. And the laws of nature's God written in the Bible, lex scripta. He was making fun of that, making fun of me because I would rely upon those things. We need not be bashful about this, friends, neighbors, and kin. If we're not willing to say that there are two revelations from God, two revealings, two uncoverings from our Maker, whereby we live, as our Declaration of 76 affirms, then we're not going to get anywhere. What are those two volumes, those two books, those two revelations? One is unwritten. We observe it around us. We learn through the centuries what's right and what's wrong. We see the patterns of what is right and what is wrong. And then also, we have the law written, as Blackstone puts it, the Bible. Well, the grand jury is a mystery. You can read books about it. It's kept a mystery so that you won't know. It's secret knowledge, how it operates. Oh, we can learn some things. I've been before the grand jury on the inside. I've testified before the grand jury when they were after me. And I've been with people on the outside trying to help them as they were testifying. I did all I could. I did all I could to try to understand. I did discover that federal courts are of the opinion that the judges have the authority to enforce grand jury subpoenas, of course. They do, yes, they say they do. But the question still remains, and the courts are divided on the question. They're not clear. Is the grand jury a part of the court? Or is it a separate fourth branch out there by itself? Well, I'm convinced, reading history, and that's what we got to hark back to, that the grand jury is separate and it's out there by itself. It doesn't answer to anybody. As a matter of fact, if it wants to, oh yeah, if it wants to, it can investigate the U.S. attorney and indict the U.S. attorney who is trying to indict somebody else. And I don't see why it couldn't even investigate a judge and indict him, although I don't know yet where I could have found where that has ever occurred. But the power of the grand jury is great. If you're on the grand jury, just remember, you're in charge, not the United States attorney. That's the law. That much I know. But the United States attorney, of course, wants to control the grand jury, and does. And with the grand jury, said the Hyde Commission, Henry Hyde was chairman of the Judiciary Committee, back in the 70s, 80s, back in the 90s, he's gone now. But he said with a grand jury and a U.S. prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich. I can vouch for that. That's true. Has been true. Is it still true? Is the color of the courts changing?
And that's an insult to the people.
That's an insult. Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
We need to carry it to its logical conclusion. The grand jury is there for us. It's not there for the U.S. prosecutor. It's the barrier that prevents the government. The grand jury has absolute power to say yes to the government. You may try this man for a crime and take his life, liberty, and property, or a combination thereof, or no, you may not. The grand jury has one duty, to either say yes to the government, you may try this fellow, or no, you may not try him. It's that simple. That's a powerful, powerful, that's a powerful, powerful influence. It's more powerful than any vote you ever voted for a congressman or a state legislator. Because we're talking here about specific instances. Justice only comes in specific instances. It does not occur in the state legislature. It does not occur by the president's actions. Justice only occurs in specific instances where the decision is not appealable. That's called the power of a lawgiver. What's a lawgiver? Well, in English, we call him a god. The power of a god is the power to decide right from wrong in individual instances when there is no appeal from that decision. That's what the jury is among men. The jury is not God with a big G. The jurymen are gods with a little g. You don't believe it? Go to the Bible. The psalmist said of men that had that position, ye are gods, little g. Jesus Christ in the gospel records affirms that. He says, doth not scripture say, ye, who's me, ye, the people. Who are the people? The militia. Who are the militia? The men that are responsible for justice and armed defense. That's the militia. And there were 12 militia, the 12 separate tribes of Israel. And Jesus Christ affirms that God has dispensed to men in our own day the power of government. We are not God. We are delegated the duty to make those decisions. And in our common law tradition, that final decision is made ultimately, and it's not overturnable. It is not overturnable. That's the decision, the verdict of the grand jury and the jury, as long as, and we've got to add this, as long as due process is followed. And that's what our Constitution says, except it says, you see, according to the course of the common law. Now, it talks about the fact of the jury there. It doesn't talk about the verdict, but listen, once the facts are established, the verdict is a foregone conclusion. Ask yourself, when there's a murder trial and the jury establishes the fact of who done it, what is the jury charged to do? Deliver what? The verdict. Well, once the facts are established, the verdict is a foregone conclusion in a case like that. So the jury has all that power. It has all that power, and it has all that authority. What we want in America, the only remedy to lawlessness is true law, period. There is no other remedy. What is true law? The laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, and the laws of nature's God, written in the Bible. Thank you, John, for a little bit of time, and back to you.
Okay, thank you. All right, and we have a guest tonight. We're going to unmute him in a minute. Sheriff from Barry County. What's that, Missouri, I think it is.
No,
anyway, Michigan, I'm sorry. Okay, we're going to unmute him in a minute. Also, there was someone else that was unmuted, Joe. Is that another person we should unmute at the same time? Jim?
Not that I know of.
Because I don't know how that person got unmuted before, but we'll take him after the sheriff. But before we go over to the sheriff, I just want to take a couple of minutes because of what Brent was talking about, and I had opened up a page here. This is a decision by Anton Scalia, as a matter of fact. U.S. versus Williams, the 1992 case, I believe it is. And just to confirm a lot of what Brent was saying, it says here, because the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts over whose functioning the courts do not preside. And Scalia goes on and he quotes quite a bit of past decisions and confirms them. In this case, he goes on to say, rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. And it goes on, says, in fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. The grand jury, although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse under the judicial auspices of its institutional relationship with the judicial branch, has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of the grand jury has generally been confined to the constitutive one of calling the grand jurors together and administering their oath of office. And that's it. So there's quite a bit in this particular paper here. Again, this is the case, United States versus Williams. And you can find this case, if you want to read it, on our website. You'll find it. Let's see. We'll go over here. You can come under the grand jury, and you'll see there is landmark Supreme Court cases. And this is a page here. So we've got a couple of really very important Supreme Court cases that people should read. You know, Miranda versus Arizona, very powerful, powerful case. And then Marbury versus Madison, I believe that was the very first case of the United States Supreme Court. That was the first case, I believe. And U.S. versus Williams and a few others. So anyway, that's available for people to read and learn and to get more knowledge and understanding of the power of the people. They are total. Remember, it's the king's bench. And the king of the court in the natural law court obviously is the creator of the universe. And we ought to represent him in coming in with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And that's what all people need to understand when they become jurists. They're going to take a vow to God really work off their heart and make a decision. You know, of course, we use our minds, of course. But, you know, ultimately, God says he wrote his laws into the hearts of men. We know right from wrong. We know when someone's been injured or not. We know, listening very carefully, if someone's been abused. And when you have 12 people working towards that end, particularly in the trial side of things, it should be pretty accurate. As long as the grand jury is properly informed and understands what their duty is and appreciates and understands the maxim that we're presumed innocent and until proven guilty, you're innocent. And that, of course, is a maxim. And there's quite a few maxims that drive the natural law courts. You know, for every injury, there must be a remedy. That's a maxim. It's a truth. You cannot take that away. It's what's right. For every injury, there must be a remedy. All right, well, anyway, let's move on to our caller here. We'll unmute Sheriff Dar, I believe it is. Sheriff, go ahead. You got the mic.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Yeah, this is Sheriff Lee from Berry County, Michigan.
Good to meet you.
Oh, all right, good meeting you, too. Been meeting with a common law group about every other Thursday, and Bob Overhill is part of that group there, so that's how I got introduced to you guys, your organization here. First of all, the question I had was, is I don't know if you guys are familiar with the lawsuits that were going on during the Clinton years and the Obama years with the, I'll call them tree huggers. And what they would do is they would do this lawsuit, and they would put a time frame where whoever was listed in the lawsuit, which would more likely be Congress or maybe the president, and if they didn't meet that time frame, then they got what they wanted. And plus, they were charging $900 an hour for attorney fees. So this was going on. This happened in Apache County, and they ended up getting all that federal land up there, getting control of that. And they put the loggers out of business. They put the miners out of business. And they were using this spotted owl and some frog had a weird name. And so I was kind of wondering if NLA was even thinking about doing the suits the same way that they did it, because what happened is when nobody answered from the presidency there, they automatically just got what they wanted, plus $900 an hour for attorney fees.
Well, that's kind of, I've never heard of that. I don't know that we would approach things that way. Clearly, though, you know, a president of the United States can't be sued, can't be charged with anything. He could be impeached, of course, and then tried in the Senate, and then he can be, and if he's found guilty, and he could also then be tried criminally by the people, by a jury of his peers, and so on. It's hard to believe, I guess it could happen, but it's hard to believe that for a couple of reasons. You know, generally speaking, when you write a paper and you file it, especially if you go up against someone in the federal government, and I have filed quite a few papers against people in the federal government and different agencies, and the U.S. attorneys always respond immediately, and they usually have it thrown out under what's called Rule 12. They also do this on the federal level also. They'll have the case thrown out. Or they'll drag it out and then make it go away eventually, because to go up against their peers, so to speak, they protect each other, and that's unfortunate. We finally have a good administration, being in the President Trump and the people he's brought together that seem to want to honor the law, and obey the law and bring back the law, and. We've heard, when you listen to him, you know, he does talk pretty strongly about the Constitution, and the people around him are starting to use the right word, using republic occasionally instead of democracy and other buzzwords, but go ahead.
Well, my opinion was over this whole thing is that they're intentionally not answering it so they could get control of that land.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a little conspiracy from within.
What is the group that is doing that? Is this an Indian thing, or it sounded like it was someplace?
It was same group that was trying to keep the solar panels from going out in Nevada there. That's why they went after the Bundy Ranch. They said you can't do it because they had this one tortoise out there that was endangered species.
They've been doing that for quite. I started hearing about that back in the 90s, and they probably were doing it earlier than that. But I know in the 90s they were using these different things. You know, they wouldn't allow a barn to come down because a particular owl was living in it or something. Like, it couldn't find another home. You know, like, it wouldn't have a home without someone to build a barn for him. You know, and crazy things. So. Yeah, I'm not familiar with anything like that. Brent, if you want to comment in here, feel free to jump in.
Well, it sounds like he's talking about that, the desert tortoise, and of course before that, back in the 70s, there was a spotted owl and all that. I understand that. That's,
it was Apache County.
Apache County, Arizona?
Right.
But the question you're talking about, you were raising a question, I didn't catch it all. I thought the question was, you were asking what is the best way to approach that, or you were asking if NLA was willing to approach it the way those fellows did out there because whatever they did worked. Was that what you were asking about, Sheriff?
Well, my opinion is that it was ignored on purpose to fund that group. That's my opinion. And I'm sitting there thinking about it. I'm going, I wonder if NLA has ever done that, where they put a deadline on if you don't reply by this. And
Well, whenever you file a paper or against anyone, they must respond on the federal level. They got 60 days, on the state level, it's 30 days. I mean, and sometimes it's 20 days, but it's written clearly in the paper. When papers are filed and served, they'll tell you you've got 30 days or 20 days to answer this, and if not, then a judgment will be taken against you, and so on and so forth. So that's in all cases, and any time we file a paper, that, of course, is there. They constantly default on us because they refuse to answer, and that's fraud. When someone has a duty to answer and they either remain silent, it's fraud. So, but we've been doing indictments under those situations where we've sent cases into federal judges to hear habeas corpus. And if the judge doesn't respond, we give them a warning. We got a couple of papers. We go back and forth with it and come up with a decision in order. And at some point, when the judge doesn't release the prisoner, and then we put a decision in order. If they still don't release the prisoner or deal with the problem, then we indict the judge. Of course, we bring it to the full jury to make that decision on the grand jury level. And we've got quite a few. I think we've got to have at least 60 or 70 judges that we've indicted already. Maybe 30 or 40 of them or so is are federal judges, and the rest are state or town or city judges. But yeah, that is always written up in every case. Again, it's the first paper they see, you know, when they're called in to respond.
Well, do I have time for one more?
Sure, yeah. Got plenty of time. Right. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was listening to you talking about the sheriffs and the lack of training and all that stuff. And mm-hmm. that lack of training brings that lack of confidence. And
right.
I've been working on, my opinion is they're working on Michigan like they were the state of Virginia, the people with the big dollars, and they're going to, they bought our governor, they bought our secretary of state, and they bought our attorney general already. And now I know they're after the House and Senate. Now, my opinion is eventually they're going to get that. So I've been trying to game plan how I'm going to handle all this gun confiscation stuff they want to do. So one of my game plans is the first officer that arrests somebody and brings them into my jail because the guy wouldn't turn in those guns, I'm not letting that officer out of jail. I'm looking at charging for kidnapping, and I'm not sure what else I could charge him with.
Well, you know, let me suggest this. I'd be a little more careful with these guys because they're as ignorant as anybody else, unfortunately. You know, they're doing their job as police officers, and if I was the sheriff, okay, I'd make a phone call to the judge and let him know, don't send these prisoners down here for no more because I'm not going to hold them, and I'd let the prisoner go. Because those courts, you know, they're not courts of record, and only a court of record can hear a criminal case. And that's a common law court. Only that, there's law and equity written into our Constitution. And equity identifies with the, you know, statutes and codes and regulations that control all different government agencies from the county level, town level, all the way up to the federal level. You know, there's all the necessary regulations and codes. There's 57 codes, for instance, on the federal level. And it controls all the commercial activities, interstate exchange commercial activities, and also all agencies. And that's what equity is for. The United States Supreme Court makes decisions in the equity courts. Very rarely do they get involved in a law court. You know, when someone moves a case into federal court for cause, for instance, it has to be for a violation of one of your unalienable rights, like the right of due process. Well, that judge has a duty to protect that person who is coming up before him, to protect that person's unalienable rights, and to dismiss the charges, shut down the case, and let the person go, unless they can prove that they're operating under a court of record that has the proper jurisdiction of the individual and is appropriately running by a free and independent jury. And unfortunately, we don't see any of those. I mean, they're not anywhere. Every jury out there is tainted one way or another, and it's a huge problem. We need to fix it. But with that said, going back to what you're saying, I'd be a little careful though with, you know, taking the police officer who is really a code enforcement officer, but you know, the sheriff is the law enforcement officer. But, you know, remember, he's as ignorant as I was and you were, and he needs to and he could learn from your response to him and the release of the prison. Say, I'm letting this guy go, and go. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you hear early enough, but we had conversations. I talked a little bit about conversations we had here in Dutchess County with our sheriff. We've been involved in for a long time in Liberty groups, and we know the sheriff pretty well, and we've been down to see him a few times, and some of us have been down there many times to see the sheriff. But he's always told us, he gave us the card, said, you have a problem, give me a call. And if they try to take a weapon away from me, because that's what they're trying to do here in New York, take my weapons, and they try to take a weapon, he says, give me a call, I'll come right down and I'll fix it. I'll enforce the law. So that's what we want in a sheriff. And sheriff's got a lot of power and authority, but you have to have your knowledge. But you got to be careful. These people are evil, and I know you know that. And
my thought on it is that the person that they're arresting, he's going to have to shuck out thousands and thousands of dollars just to defend himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I'm not going to let him do that. We're going to settle this on the government side. So we're going to go out and arrest him, and then we'll settle it there.
Well, that's a possible way to go, yeah.
That way it comes out of government funds, and that, to me, it's a way of protecting this guy's livelihood. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, it would be a big message to other people, others in the county also. And you know, there's power in numbers. Do you have other sheriffs working with you in other counties that you're communicating and sharing and growing in common law and constitution or anything? Or are you on your own at this point? Huh?
Nope, it's getting better.
Yeah, because you want to get other sheriffs. I know Sheriff Mack, when they had a situation with the feds, and there were 7 sheriffs got together, and they decided they weren't going to deal with it no more, and they told the feds to take a hike, and they took a hike real quick. And but you know, you go up against 7 sheriffs, or even a, you know, 3 or 4, you know. But one's a little tough. You got to be a little careful. You know, you really want to get someone partnershipping in your knowledge and really there to bring the law back. And of course, that's what we're trying to do from our level, the people, and you need to do from your position, the sheriff, and we need to bring these people back under the chains of the Constitution. You know?
All right. I've got a common law attorney by the name of Carson Tucker. I don't know if you guys have met yet or not, but he did a couple of memorandums for me for these executive orders by our governor. And I made it quite clear that we're not going to enforce any ridiculous orders. And so 4 other sheriffs jumped in. Now we've got, I think we got about 8 sheriffs total in the state that spoke up now.
Well, that's great. And, that's good.
Well, I'll try and get those memorandums to you, because he said I can share them with whomever I want. I sent them out to all 83 sheriffs, and I got it out to Mac, and he's sending it out to the other 3,000 sheriffs. And it's basically talks about the U.S. Code 42, 1983, and how we can be held liable 3 times damages.
Yeah, that's on the civil side. Then there's the other side, the 18 U.S.C., which is focusing in on the criminal side. So.
Right.
Yeah, you know, if you want to make a connection between us and that individual, we'd love to have a conversation, maybe a private conversation for a while, and even maybe he can come onto the program and talk a little bit. So if you want to make that connection with us, we're good to do that. I don't know, how did you connect with us? Did you connect to us through Jan or who?
Bob Overhill.
Okay, Bob. Okay, and so he's talking with Jan, so you can connect with us the same way, and Jan can, you know, get a put together some kind of a meeting time with that particular common. He's a common law lawyer, you're saying?
Right.
Yeah, we'd love to talk with him. You know, Brent, we met. I read his book, The Excellence of the Common Law, by Brent Winters, and he's a common law lawyer, and he's also a bar lawyer, and he's got a bar license. But he wasn't taught under the bar school, per se. I'll let him talk more for himself than I should. But in any event, you know, we've connected well with him because of his background in common law. And again, I learned a lot from his book. You know, a lot of my knowledge, especially the historical side of things, from his book. And we also have the militia. He wrote a book on the militia. We wrote quite a few books.
I have those, and I push those.
Yeah, they're good.
Constantly refer people to the Common Lawyer website, and I gave my state rep one of his pocket constitution that explains clause by clause, and I also gave her the militia one, so she has an understanding what the militia is too. So my state rep has that now.
All right. Well, look, we need to try to get all of these sheriffs educated. That's our focus, and we're going to try to do that from the grassroots, and if you could do it from your end to try to get them out to get a good education. I mean, look, I've taken courses or started to take courses on the Constitution, and they bored me to tears. I'd fall asleep on it, you know. You know, I like to get down to the meat and potatoes, the nuts and the bolts, you know. And that's what our courses are, straight to the gusto, you know.
Right.
So maybe you can send some of these sheriffs up to get an education, and we have we had the page open before. Let me see if I got it. Sheriff's page. Okay, let me see where it's at. I think it's under the people's duty. On our sheriff's page, underneath the people's duty, you'll see the county sheriff. And you might have gotten this already. You might have downloaded this, but they can come up and download a copy of the Sheriff's Handbook, which we're revising now, but right now that's what is existing out there. It's pretty helpful. And of course, the Constitution, be helpful to any sheriff or deputy.
Well, I'm having a hard time getting Sheriff Mack into a sheriff's conference or a police conference because they all think he's some type of lunatic, and I'm going, lunatic? I said, he won. Why would he not be embracing that and learning from it?
Well, again, that's what the minions of the New World Order do. Those are the bar attorneys. They say he's a wacko and so on and so forth. But if you sit and listen to him, he's got quite a few YouTubes out there, and you listen to the things he's talking about, you say, that's the sheriff I want. Anybody with common sense that loves liberty and understands liberty, that's the sheriff I want. Unfortunately, most bar attorneys have no clue on what liberty is.
Sheriff, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Oh, yep, go right ahead.
Well, I wanted the sheriff to unpack the idea that came across with Sheriff Mack when he won. He took a case and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. Can you tell us that story a little bit?
Oh yeah, it had to do with a Brady bill, and my understanding is a Brady bill was actually bigger than what they first released. It was like a four stage plan maybe to decimate the Second Amendment. And this one here, they were trying to commandeer the office of the sheriff and basically make them do their dirty work for him. He had to something to do with make sure people were mentally fit before they had a gun. And when they were explaining it at the sheriff's conference in Arizona, Sheriff Mack, being the sheriff of Graham County, stood up and they told him he wasn't going to do it. Well, then they said, well, you understand, Sheriff, that there's an arrest clause in there if you refuse to do it. And it was a high court misdemeanor if he refused to do it. So he went home and found out there was another sheriff, Prinz, P-R-N-T-Z, and there's five other sheriffs that weren't going to do it either. And so they ended up suing the federal government. They got the National Rifle Association involved. And it's funny because if you listen to the story, you think they'd sue under the Second Amendment, and they didn't. They sued under the 10th Amendment and states' rights. And basically what it is, as Max said, I don't work for the federal government. And Justice Scalia gave probably one of the most powerful 10th Amendment victories of any court ruling you'll ever see. And it's very, very powerful, where he talks about that the Constitution protects us from our own best intentions. And he goes on even past that. He says it divides, something about it divides sovereigns and divides us into three separate branches of government so precisely that we may resist the temptation to basically centralize that power into one location for an expedient solution of the crisis of the day. And that's just by going by memory. And I've been quoting that a lot because our state government here has centralized the power into the governor, where the governor comes out with these executive orders without going through Congress. And I think it fits very well with what's going on. Anyways, they took it up to the Supreme Court all the way up, and $420,000 later, they ended up getting a 5-4 decision.
And what did the decision precisely say?
Basically that the states were not bound, or basically the federal government couldn't tell the states what to do. They were a sovereign government. And
so the federal government can't tell the sheriffs what to do. Is that what it
exactly
down to? Okay.
Right. And if you get a chance,
and ultimately ended up with, I believe, a statement in there claiming that he was the highest law enforcement highest law enforcement. What do you call him? Agent.
Yeah, you call him a CLEO. CLEO, the chief law enforcement officer.
There you go. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and he said, being the highest law enforcement officer, he didn't answer to the federal government, he basically answers to the people who put him in office or his electorate.
Yeah, and Sheriff Mack, again, as I mentioned earlier, along with six other sheriffs and threw the feds out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let me ask another question, if I may, Sheriff.
Sure.
So, I've never been a sheriff, but my understanding is, from what sheriffs tell me, that when you become a sheriff, you take an oath.
That is correct.
And the oath substantially says that you'll support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies foreign and domestic. Am I close?
Well, Michigan doesn't say that, but it says we'll support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Michigan.
Do you swear also to enforce the laws of the state of Michigan?
Yeah, according to the best of your ability, yeah. And Michigan is a common law state.
Yeah, so if the legislature passes a law and the governor signs it, then you consider that a law and you would enforce it?
If it falls within the parameters of the Constitution, because the supreme law is the Constitution.
Okay, I get it. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
So if the governor says, I decree law, and you say to yourself, well, I don't think the governor has authority to do that, then you've got, well, I'll let you tell the story. What are you doing right now? Because you're making decisions, right? Because the governor is doing this. He's decreeing law, isn't he?
Right. She. We got that Whitmer that's been all over the...
She or it or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You can't tell anymore. But the bottom line is you're making decisions as we speak right now about what to enforce and what not to enforce.
Right. We're using our own discretion.
And... you see this catching on a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's good news, and we need good news, Sheriff, so thanks for showing up.
Well, good news is, too, that the church has won their lawsuit in Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
Judge, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I have a friend in Idaho just filed a suit in federal court, a lawyer friend, for three pastors up there, against the Attorney General, and the Attorney General, he called immediately and was really nervous and upset. Didn't know what to do. Well, of course he doesn't know what to do. He's not following the law. Is this, again, this is child's play. Did it take a lawyer to figure this stuff out? And I know you're laughing. The reason you're laughing is because you know I'm telling the truth.
Oh, no, I'm laughing because you nailed it.
Well, but what is there to say? Have we lost our minds? And they're pushing us, and they are laughing their tails off at the American people, saying, I can't believe they're stupid enough to go along with this stupidity, and there is no law. We just say it and claim it's a law, and you guys do it. Man, you're really stupid.
I got interviewed by the National Fox News about the governor's order, and of course they're trying to pick a fight between me and the governor, and I stopped them right off the bat. I said, no, we're not here to pick a fight. We're just here to use common sense.
Uh-huh.
And one of the orders she gave was that you can use a canoe and you can use a kayak, but you can't use a motorboat. And I started laughing, and I'm going, okay. I said, first of all, we don't even have our patrol boats in the water yet. We don't get those until the end of May.
Uh-huh.
But secondly, we rescue more kayaks than all other boats combined.
Oh.
And maybe it's because of kayaking has gotten so popular now, but they're also tippy. And we got 327 lakes in our county.
Right.
And I publicly announced that if a dad wants to take his daughter or son out fishing or mom, and they're going to be in a motorboat out in the middle of a lake with this COVID, I said, that's where we want them.
Yeah. Well, I get your point.
Yeah. And it was just the whole thing about just telling my officers, use your own discretion. If there's somebody who has COVID and they're running around spreading COVID around people, take them, get them, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But if somebody doesn't have COVID and they're running around, leave them alone.
Now, how many terms have you done so far?
Well, this is my end of my fourth. I just went uncontested for my fifth term.
Has that ever happened before in that county?
Yeah, one other sheriff, Dave Wood.
How many terms did he do?
5.
So this next term will be a total of 20 years?
Yeah.
So your support is good. People like what you're doing and your attitude.
Right. Yes.
Well, that's good news. You know, I'm familiar with you because a fellow named Paul, he apparently meets with you once in a while, and he tells me what you discuss. You meet with a group of men every week or two, don't you? Or every month or something?
Yeah, it was every other week until everybody shut their doors on us.
Oh, yeah. You're not doing it now, then?
No, we're looking at starting it up this month again.
Oh, and what do you do when you have these meetings exactly? Do you have an agenda you follow?
Well, we're kind of a little bit unorganized yet. And sadly, we've been meeting for 2 years. We started with a goal of I wanted information that I could give to other law enforcement officers so I could spread this information on out on this common law because it's not taught. We are taught case law. Or I hate the term case law, but we're taught court rulings. And we're only taught the cherry-picked versions of it. Like you mentioned that, what was that one versus Arizona? Somebody just mentioned it.
Was that Miranda?
Miranda, thank you. Miranda versus Arizona. We're taught that with the Miranda warnings, but they cherry-pick it. And nobody's ever really sat down and read the whole thing in law enforcement that I know of. Most of the officers out there, in fact, I'll bet you 99% of the officers out there have never read the Constitution.
Unfortunately, most people that are elected to any office haven't read the Constitution, and it's a shame. And they think we're a democracy, and, they tell us we're a democracy until you go look it up and find out what we really are. And so the ignorance is really out there. We have to get rid of this ignorance with knowledge, with education, and this is the key. And we have to get it back into our schools, and we have a plan to do that too. But first and foremost, we got to take the federal courts back so we can take the state courts back, so we can take the political process back and the judicial process back, and then start moving towards education in the schools, a proper education from grade one.
Well, you are correct. I always ask these political candidates, I said, what's the purpose of government? Or what's the proper role of government? And all of a sudden they start saying, well, taxes, to get you this, to get you that. And I said, nope. And then they look at me, well, what is it? And I said, to protect people's rights. That's a fourth grade question in a civics class.
Yeah, the best answer, too, which is a little bit of a paragraph, it's a paragraph anyway. It's the preamble. We the people of the United States, in order to perform a more perfect union, establish justice, that's the purpose of government, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And that's what we the people ordained for the United States of America, right there. There's 6 points in there, 6 directives, and everything they do should fit inside one of those 6 directives.
Right.
And
well, we've been meeting for like 2.5 years. I feel like a dog chasing my tail still because it's trying to understand the common law. I got Brent's book, The Excellence of Common Law, plus they got me the Bibles. Then I've got the Constitution book that's all written out for the clause by clause, and I got the militia book, and then the jury, the proper role of the jury. So it's funny because I was asked to speak at a memorial service over in our Orangeville, and I had that thick Constitution book with me, and I was asked to speak at the last minute because one guy couldn't get up and speak, and so I started talking about the government and the Constitution and all that, and supervisor, his own wife, come on up to me. She says, you moved me. You have anything I can look at? So I handed her one of Brent's books on the Constitution. And I said, this right here is clause by clause, explains it, where it come from. And I said, this is by far the best pocket Constitution you ever get. And I said, you got my highlighted one too, doggone it. So we're getting places like that. I've got a guy in the county here who has a lot of money, and he said he's going to see about buying a few hundred of those so we can start handing them out to kids at schools. One of the guys who puts on the memorial service, I got him a copy of the Constitution, the clause-by-clause one, and he's really into it. In fact, he's battling with our zoning right now. He bought those storage containers like you see on the ships.
Mm-hmm.
And he bought those. They're in his yard, and he says they're awesome because they never get mice in them. Everything's dry in them and so on. Well, zoning.
Yeah, they're big steel containers, right?
Yeah, the steel containers.
Yeah, the storage containers, yeah.
Our county has a zoning ordinance forbidding those things. And he's just livid because they're trying to tell him he's got to move them. And so I'm trying to find something that he can use to go fight the zoning.
Well, are they taking him into the local court, the village court or the town court or something like that?
Not yet.
Huh?
They've issued a warning ticket telling him he's got to take care of them.
Yeah, but at some point, if he keeps ignoring them, at some point they'll try to get him into the court, and then the best thing for him to do is to move it to federal court for cause for challenging the jurisdiction that they don't have. But of course, that requires it requires some knowledge, really, to be able to do that. You're not going to get a lawyer to do that, especially a bar attorney. They're not going to do it. So you really have to self-educate yourself. But once you get into a federal court, as long as you understand what you're doing and you bring the proper information before the court and lay it out, that judge really doesn't have too much of a choice, but to agree with you ultimately. You know, if you don't give that judge a place to hang his hat, some escape, if you block him from escaping, then he's got a rule. Or what he can do, and this has happened to me in federal court, the judge, I mean, we don't know this for sure, but we know how they operate because everything changes overnight. Ultimately, the judge told the other side in my case, deal with this problem, get it out of my courtroom. And the whole thing disappeared, you know?
Yeah. Well, I questioned the authority of them even coming up with an ordinance like that.
They can't come up to it. Any ordinances can't be applied upon the people, okay? Mm-hmm. Unless you're in a community, maybe like a gated community, someplace where there's an association and you're coming in with an agreement and certain things, and if you agree to those things, that's fine. And you're not going to be able to get a town to come together to get everybody to sign an agreement. And so, therefore, it's administrative, and unless they agree to something or agree to their court that they might be brought into, they acquiesce to them, then they could be held and they'll fine them and do whatever they want to do. But if you deny it and challenge them and push it to the hilt, which is taking it to the federal court, you could win. And in a simple thing like that, I don't think a federal judge would have too much of a problem, even though he adheres to the powers that be, so to speak. He maintains the status quo. And this kind of an argument, which is very, very minor, at least from the perspective of a federal judge, he'd probably agree with you and to order the court to cease and desist and leave this person alone. You know, I'm doing a... I'm finally taking a traffic ticket. I'm going to take it to the federal court because I've had enough of these people. And I'll see where that goes. It'll be the first one.
You're doing the right to travel?
Well, it's not on that. No. I had my car was uninspected. And the problem is I got that stupid light on, and New York changed it. You know, if you spend $1,200 or a certain amount of money and you can't get it fixed, they'll give you a bypass for a year, but they don't do that anymore. So I guess they expect me to just throw the car away or not drive it. And I drive it until I can get this problem fixed, so which I'm still working on. But, I think it's the computer, so I'm waiting for a computer to come in. But the point is I've been driving for 6 or 8 months now without an inspection sticker, and I'm just not going to take their tickets no more. I wrote my papers and sent it in. My next step is moving into the federal court.
How is an inspection not a search?
Huh?
How is an inspection not a search?
What do you mean not a search?
We just had a case here in Michigan where a guy challenged the a parking ticket because they chalked his tires, and a judge ruled that chalking the tires was a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I saw that in the news.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't remember being there. That's great.
Yeah.
So I asked the mayor if I could have my $15 back, said, hey, parking tickets through the years. That's what he did, he laughed.
Yeah.
But if that's a search, then what about registering guns? Isn't that a search?
Well, true. Of course it is. Yeah. Look, we shouldn't be registering guns. I mean, I could agree, of course. I think we can all agree, you know, certain individuals that can't have a gun for certain reasons, maybe mental reasons, something that the courts have set up that maybe a grand jury, a trial jury or something, you know, this person can't have a gun no more. It could be part of their punishment or something of that nature. There's got to be something solid. Other than that, of course, they have no authority to prevent us from having a weapon, you know. If someone's on probation or something, and of course that would be part of their probation, they shouldn't have a weapon. Maybe a person who committed a violent crime with a weapon and after 30 years in jail or something, you know, as long as the jury stipulated it, then they shouldn't be able to get a weapon back. But it would have to be the people deciding that. It's the people that have to make that decision.
In Michigan, they were doing what they called safety inspections, and but you had to have this inspection certificate with you all the time. So me and Mike Rains, who's the sheriff over in Eaton County, and I were going to sue the state, and what we're going to do is just randomly subpoena clerical staff who handle these inspections, and we're going to prove to the jury that that it was really a registration, and we figured we'd get rid of our handgun registration that way. And somebody got wind of it in Lansing, and then they quick changed the term from a safety inspection to a gun registration. So now we got to go look at it from a different angle. I think it's an unlawful search.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
What exactly is the name of the county seat where you are?
Hastings.
Hastings with an H?
Yes.
Okay. Hastings, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
We've got about 6 minutes left, and I'd like to try to get to a few people in the queue here, maybe give them a minute or two here or there before we close down. But again, you're welcome to come on anytime to talk with us anytime you want, and just let Jan know.
Appreciate the time.
Try to get you up front, you know. And that other individual, you know, we'd love to meet up and have a conversation. If you could set up a conversation, that'd be good. Maybe we can find common grounds to work together on.
Sure.
All right, Sheriff. Thanks for your time. Appreciate the call. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate it.
Okay, what we're going to do is we only got a few minutes, and I promised myself I'd go to bed early tonight. Midnight would be early for me, but don't want to stay up too late, so let me unmute someone and hang on 1 second. Let's take our first caller here. And again, we're going to make it quick, maybe one question, maybe a minute or so we can get all the people in the queue through. There's only about four people. So wireless caller. Who's it? Heather Lee, go right ahead.
Yes, I had a question for the sheriff. I'm from Leelanau County, Michigan. And my sheriff is Sheriff Borkovich. And I wondered, Sheriff, if you're still on, if you could answer this question quickly. Have you had communication with Sheriff Borkovich? He's one of the four that stood up.
Yeah, go ahead, Sheriff. You've been unmuted.
Did you hear the question?
Yeah, I thought he was here, but there he is. Go ahead, Sheriff. Sorry, you're unmuted.
I muted myself with a cheek here. I thought he injured his eye, so he's kind of out of commission for a little bit and had to have surgery on it. Is that the right sheriff?
No, Borkovich of Leelanau County.
Yeah, didn't he injure his eye here like last week?
Oh, I didn't hear about that. But have you communicated with him?
Not since our last conference. But I have with Benzie County and Mason County Sheriff Kim Cole.
Okay. Well, maybe with Robert and myself, he's a friend of mine, the sheriff is, and I'm thinking that maybe we could get together and set up a meeting or something, because I know that he is very, very pro. He's a good man. He's just a good sheriff, and I'd really love him to be in the circle of the promotion of sheriffs within the state of Michigan to stand up against the tyranny. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I'll be in contact through Robert. Okay. God bless you. Thank you.
All right.
Yep. Thank you. All right. Okay. I'll leave you unmuted in case someone else wanted to talk with you about something, Sheriff. I've only got a couple more callers, so we'll take a couple of them. This is a wireless caller. You've been unmuted, one of the wireless callers. Give us your first name and your state. 412, call from 412, wireless caller. You got the mic.
Hello?
Yep, go right ahead.
Is that me? Hello. This is the Icebreaker from Pittsburgh. I want to give a shout out to my homeboy, Jim Barr. I've got a poem here, John. It's called COVID-19 Vibe.
COVID-19 what?
COVID-19 Vibe, V-I-B-E.
Okay.
How many times can I clean out the garage, seeing baseball and golf, but it's just a mirage? I'm watching some great stories about Jesus, the president and governor trying hard to please us by determining how and when to act while keeping our civil rights fully intact. Something that the Patriot Act does not do. A doorway to tyranny can make us all blue. Don't want to go down that slippery slope like our old friend, Note the Soap. Tripping on this strange vacation, wrestling with some lack of motivation. Working through it, gotta stay on my game. Life is surreal, but I still know my name. I'm getting intimate with my vitamin flask. I'm trying to get used to this silly-looking mask. Into the store, we look like banditos, pilfering bread, milk, fruit, and Fritos.
I feel like I'm in a Western movie, you know, but go ahead.
Where life is heading, I can't help but ponder, but kudos to healthcare, store clerk, and first responder. All gassed up with no place to go. A few monkeys done stopped my show. I can't stay all cooped up inside. Got to get some air, some sun, take a ride. And a bit of measured human interaction would surely bring some satisfaction. Be calm and take it all in stride, Jack, with an eye out for the latest life hack. Mindful of the sick and dearly departed, Lord, have mercy on the brokenhearted. With encouragement and respect for each other, we'll come back sooner and stronger, my brother. Although we've lost a bit of our pump, God's grace can get us over this hump. The president, to COVID-19 and those who conspired, get out of here with that stuff. You're fired. This is the Icebreaker. Be well and do well, my friends.
Okay, thanks for sharing that. Appreciate the call. We're going to go to the next caller. We only got a couple of minutes. We've got three people. I'd like to give everyone a minute or two and before we close down. So thank you. All right, next caller is another wireless caller. It's a 904 number. Go ahead. You got the mic. Wireless caller. 904 area code. You got the mic.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good. How you doing? First name and state?
Okay. Yes. My name is Rhonda. I'm from Florida.
Okay.
So I have a quick question on the hydroxychloroquine. Do y'all are aware of the side effects that can happen with this drug?
Yeah, you know, I haven't looked it up yet. I don't know if anybody else has looked it up. I've heard it's safe, but I did hear that it is a problem for certain people, maybe that have heart conditions and maybe some other problems too. But I also believe that they've got three different things that they're releasing or working on that are potential cures. And ultimately, I heard there were 10, but I know three that they've been named. I know I wrote them down, and I was going to do some research on it, and I haven't had the time. But if anybody, any of the moderators here that can answer that question, feel free to pick up the mic and speak.
Well, I'm not a doctor, but I played one on stage.
Oh, there you go, Terry.
But I've been looking, yeah, it causes other things to happen to your body. And as long as your body can absorb that, that's fine.
Yeah, isn't there something else that they connect with it, another chemical or something?
Yeah, either zinc or remdesivir,
yes.
Or azithromycin.
And I think that helps to prevent some of the problems. Is that the case?
Yes, it's the combination that controls everything. So you definitely want to be under the care of a physician. Don't take it unless you're under the care of a physician.
Especially the fish tank stuff, right?
That's bad stuff. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Terry.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because, yeah, you're right. You know, a lot of people that do have problems with it are generally people that have been on it long-term for different things. But there are severe side effects, like it can affect the heart rhythm.
I heard, yes. So people who have a rhythm problem or something, any kind of a heart problem, I guess, they got to be careful. But I understand there's a couple other things, so we'll see what's in the mix. I got to do some research myself on that. So. All right.
It's really good. It has a good resource. If you look for the name of the drug, hydroxychloroquine, they go over different things. The only other thing I was going to ask you guys, do you know, as far as, I was listening to the Coronavirus Task Force a couple weeks ago, they said the FDA is streamlining everything. They have like 231 trials, I think, on HCQ. So
yeah.
Do you know how that could affect the
process? Yeah, I heard a lot of good reports on the early parts of those things. It's been a lot of good news on it. But again, you do have to be careful if you have a heart condition and maybe some other problems. I don't know. So. All right, let me take the next caller because it's late. We're after midnight, but I do want to try to get the other two people that are left in and hopefully come back next week and we'll spend more time. Thanks. Your name was Lana, right?
Rhonda.
Rhonda. Okay, Rhonda. Thank you.
Right,
okay, let's take Terry from New Jersey. You got the mic, Terry. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. This was a very interesting conversation, and I was wondering because I was indicted on a criminal matter, and the judge, I did a petition for post-conviction relief.
We hear you crumbling paper out there. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Terry.
So, the judge said in his opinion, no person other than the juror, prosecuting attorney, clerk of the grand jury, blah, 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 may be present while the grand jury is in session. Thus, a defendant, meaning me, had no right to appear before the grand jury unless subpoenaed or invited to testify with his or her consent.
Were you the subject of the grand jury?
Yes, but I was not invited.
Well, the grand jury does not have to pull you before them.
I know that. And actually, they never even invited the alleged victim. So basically, the grand jury never even hears testimony from the alleged victim.
Well, look, if they don't hear from the victim, that's a problem, in my opinion. Well, no doubt about it, it's a problem, okay, because the victim needs to tell their story, and that's the person they really need to be paying attention to. But bear in mind, you're under a grand jury right now, a potential indictment, or have you been indicted?
A long time ago.
Okay, but bear in mind, ultimately, the grand jury was not a real grand jury anyway. I don't know that there's been a real grand jury anywhere that I'm aware of in many, many years. Because once they taint them by the way that they decide these grand jurists, and even the trial juries, they're all tainted. They're asked questions, and these people, you know, that are in charge, you know, the judges and the prosecutors and all those people, they stack those juries, and it's really horrible what they do. I'm sure there's some incentive there for them to do that. Usually, maintain the status quo on something, maybe a vindictive prosecution, you know, and they collaborate and beat people up that way. But generally speaking, you know, the way the courts are operating, they're under civil law. So at least since 1938, the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, which took to control of the courts in 1938, at that point they turned to civil law. So really, there hasn't really been a lawful court if they're operating under civil law. There hasn't been a lawful court. And that's a major problem because you have a lot of people in prison that really, you know, shouldn't be there, even if they're guilty, because they never had their due process. So once we get the law back into the courts, that may be a dilemma that's going to be a problem to deal with. But first and foremost, anybody that's been prosecuted by the feds, and as far as being one of the people, in most cases, probably need to be released immediately, especially the IRS cases. The other thing is any of these people in county jail that's been sent there by town courts, village courts, city courts, with the exception of certain city courts. I know here in New York, the New York City courts are supposed to be courts of record. That's what it says in the Constitution, even though they're under civil law also. But generally speaking, laying that aside, the town courts, city courts, village courts, they can't send someone to jail. And if the sheriffs realized that, they'd have an empty house there. Then they probably wouldn't need state prisons or things like that. I think people probably should be incarcerated if convicted in a lawful court. That they should be, incarcerated, probably in their county, at least that they can have access. Yeah, Gerard, is that you?
Yeah, I just got my mic working, but that's okay.
All right, because we hear you if you want to pipe in. So anyway, it's a problem. It's a major problem. But we'll have to deal with it as things come up. We do intend on taking back the courts and giving them back to the people where they belong. And once we take the federal courts back, that controls, just one federal case, that controls all 94 federal districts. And then it's a slam dunk in the states because the federal courts will enforce the law that has to be obeyed. We need to get common law courts back. This is anytime a criminal accusation against an individual, a criminal case takes place, it must be a court of record. Nothing less is accepted, and that's that. So, anyway, hopefully soon we'll be able to fix that. Okay, let's take our last caller here. Thanks, Terry. David, looks like we're from North Carolina, maybe. You got the mic. 910.
Hello.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. I just wonder if there's any way I can call Brent tomorrow.
I don't know, Brent. I know he's going to be on the soapbox tomorrow. No, not tomorrow, Thursday, actually. But you can probably email him or go to his website and get the email. Brent, are you here?
I'm here, and I'll be on soapbox in the morning, too, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And here's what I want you to do. Go to the website commonlawyer.com and email me if you would.
I will do so.
Tell him David from North Carolina on last night's call. He'll know who you are.
And give me your right. That's right. And give me your number, David. Just email your number.
I'll do it. All right.
Are you on the platform here, Brent? I don't know if you could see his phone number. We've got his phone number. I can drop his phone number in your Skype if you want.
Great. You can do that.
Yeah, I'll drop his phone number. It's David from NC, North Carolina, and he's a 910 right. number. I'll drop it in your Skype, okay?
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, I guess that was our last call. All right. Okay, we'll see you next week. Lord willing, all this noise. Hang on a second.
Rick, don't
ride. Well, that sounds. All right, well, anyway, thanks everyone for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. We'll be here at 9 p.m. Eastern, and we'll pick up part 3 of the paper, which will be the last part that we're reading, the extraordinary case that we have going here. And we'll be open back up for an open forum for conversations. Thanks for coming. Have a good night.